so much information that they were going to prove that their perpetrator's secrets would die with me. And I was to be sacrificed at Bohemian Grove. That's what the Bohemian Grove sacrifices are about. It's more than just a ritualistic display. It's also proof that secrets are dying with the MK Ultra survivors. So it was at that time that I was being passed to my demise that intelligence insider Mark Phillips, who was working the highest levels of intelligence mind sciences to preserve the sanctity of free thought, stepped in and lifted my daughter, Kelly, and me right out of the Washington, D.C. human trafficking swamp, saved my life, saved my mind. And I've been on a healing journey ever since of being able to help other people to know that healing is possible. You went crawling in on your belly and filmed what was going on at Bohemian Grove. You were one of the very first to get that information out there. You know, and that was deeply appreciated. There have been so many of us who've been out here all these years just hammering away at this truth, trying to wake people up. Well, we're in the midst of the Great Awakening, and it's our opportunity to be able to effectively start making the positive, necessary changes that you and I and others like us have been screaming about for over 30 years.
Absolutely. And I remember when I was first getting on air, people that have been victims of stuff said it's a place in the Redwoods. They killed a kid in front of an owl. We're not saying at their main ritual where they get guests to go there that they even know what it's part of. It goes on year round. The point is the CIA cult, which they admit runs that and created it, they at their own time use it for that. So the media tries to conflate the cremation of care every, you know, mid-July with other stuff that goes on there to say, oh no, it's just a play. No, that's their externalization of people they're trying to recruit into it. But definitely it continues to come out that is an epicenter of this. What's your information on Bohemian Grove, Kathy O'Brien?
Yes, you know, again, trauma is the basis of mind control. And, you know, those traumatic events do control other people and the onlookers. And that's the Hitler-Himmler research that we brought into the U.S. through Project Paperclip. Showed that there's no trauma more horrific on the human mind than sexual abuse of a child. And equally right up there is blood trauma. This formula for mind control is a scientific exact formula and includes sleep, food, and water deprivation, because that starves our brain when we don't have proper nutrition. That's what's happening to our food supply. But this secret formula was being kept in secret societies, like my grandfather's Blue Masonic Lodge, where all the local politicians and law enforcement hung out. And also at places like the Bohemian Grove or the Epstein Island of its time when I was a child, being prostituted to pedophile leaders as a little bitty child, Mackinac Island, Michigan.
I want to go through all these places when we come back, but just so hold that right there. We're going to break about 3 minutes, but I want you to continue and go into detail. We got all the time you need here. But again, look at the Catholic Church. Look at, they'll use any big institution, the Boy Scouts. They've taken, I mean, how many institutions, even when you were being tortured 35, 40, 50 years ago, I mean, what percentage of these have been partially infiltrated or totally taken over?
A lot of them have been infiltrated horrifically. You know, the Catholic Church, now that would be quite a topic right there, because my father was trained by cardinal law on how to raise me in MK Ultra. Cardinal law came out in the Catholic child abuse scandal some years ago before he was just transferred to the Basilica in Rome. You know, I mean, it's just been going on a long time. The infiltration has gone unchecked for so long that these places now are very much saturated with this kind of abuse. We've got a long way to go to clean this mess up. Let's start with the FBI, the CIA, and our school systems and our churches. Yeah, we got quite a little ways to go.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ultimate CMOS has been by far and away our best-selling product on the AlexJonesStore.com when we launched it some months ago. Now, we've had a hard time keeping the gummies in stock, so we formulated the capsules while we wait on more gummies to come in. Now, Irish CMOS is something that's known to be incredible for your body because of the natural iodine that exists in it. It's not just any iodine. It's also abundantly bioavailable. Now, if you don't know, iodine is incredible for your health and supports your body's ability to detoxify itself. Check out Ultimate CMOS capsules right now at the AlexJonesStore.com. Not only are you fighting for your health, your immunity, and your body's ability to detoxify itself, but you're fighting for humanity as well by keeping Alex Jones on the air, InfoWars on the air, and this crew operating to broadcast the truth worldwide wherever it is being censored, just like your body is under relentless assault and needs Ultimate CMOS capsules in order to fight off all the toxins that you're met with. So is InfoWars under assault and needs the audience. So go to the AlexJonesStore.com right now and subscribe for Ultimate CMOS capsules every month.
It's Thursday, April 24th in the year of our Lord, 2025. And you're listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
I think it's time to blow this scene. Get everybody in the stuff together. Okay, 3, 2, 1, let's jam.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to The American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Coming to you live this Thursday morning. We're going to open up phone lines today and take your calls as much as possible. Get the conversation going. We got a lot of news out of Europe, actually, with Germany's national election. Looking like it may be going to the AfD, and the German authorities doing everything they possibly can to destroy that particular expression of democracy. I also have some videos I just put in there. That I want to go to. I went to another clip from this yesterday, the Glenn Beck, Steve Bannon interview. But I saw, like, just, you know, driving on the way here, I just had the Twitter video playing, just scrolling through. And there were like three or four videos of people at this level of like Glenn Beck and higher. And it seems like everybody's getting the message now, everybody's arriving to our resonance, tuning up to our wavelength of impatience, of just really being impatient, which I think is fair. I mean, how many days has it been since Trump was inaugurated? I think something like 90 something. 587 days to go until the midterms. 93 days. And look, you can point to the shutdown of the border. That's been good. So there's that. So there is that. And the tariffs have been pretty good. Obviously, the pardons were great. But I mean, it seems like everything Trump did that was really, you know, powerful and quick all happened in the first month or so. And then we've just been twiddling our thumbs. There's been no mass deportations. There's been no arrests of the people who created the conditions of the mass deportations. No arrests for any of the other fraud. You have Doge apparently identifying billions upon billions of dollars of fraud and waste. But nobody to blame for it. But nobody at fault. Everybody's getting a little bit impatient. Everybody getting a little bit sick of hearing that things are just around the corner. And you can put the blame in a lot of places. I mean, obviously, the Congress and Senate completely failing to do their part in, you know, backing up Trump, codifying his changes into law, even just, you know, dominating the news cycle, launching investigations. I mean, where have they been? Pam Bondi, of course, may be the biggest disappointment so far. No Epstein arrests, no releases even, really, of documents we haven't seen before. Not a lot of, you know, declassified stuff coming out. We just don't have a lot of time. We don't have a lot of time. And in fact, I wish I could show some of the videos I was playing, but just to express to you, I'm not the only one saying this.
There's one I saw. I wish I could tell you who the guy was, but he said the F word about every other word. So I didn't think the crew needed to be put through that this morning, having to censor it. But he's sitting there going, we have a couple months to get this done to make sure that the left does not come back into power. Because when they come back into power, they're going to start killing everyone. You've seen how radical they are. You've seen how extreme they are. You saw how extreme they were last time. And that was before anything even happened. So now that they're being prodded and driven to this high pitch of extremism, this isn't like a, well, they'll win the next round and then we'll come back the next time. Like, no. If Hakeem Jeffries becomes the leader of the Democrats 500 days from now, that's it for the Trump administration. It's nothing but impeachment from then on out. I can pretty much guarantee you. So obviously the judicial interference is the biggest issue at this point. And they are, again, just deliberately creating the conditions where it's impossible to expel the illegal immigrants. And I just really struggle to understand why we allow this to happen. I mean, you've got laws on the books about protecting the border. The Biden administration just completely ignores them, just chooses not to enforce them. They had no right. They had no legal ability to open the border like they did. And yet they do. And yet they bring in tens of millions of people over the course of several years. But nobody interferes. Nobody, you know, sounds off against this. Any cases that were brought were just dismissed outright. It's the executive branch. They get to do whatever the hell they want, right? And Trump gets into office and we can't expel these people because they're demanding due process. Do we understand what the word due means in that sentence? Are we forgetting half of that word combo? Due process means the process that is due, the process required by law. Nobody in the United States illegally deserves a trial before being expelled. We don't have to. It's not the law. It doesn't even make sense if you think about it. I mean, could an El Salvadorian in El Salvador, you know, be protected by U.S. laws? No, that's ridiculous. That's absurd, isn't it? Isn't it kind of absurd to think that some foreigner somewhere else would come under the jurisdiction of the United States and that we would be obligated to provide them with a lawyer to go to trial? It's like they're not our citizens. It doesn't matter if they're in their own country or ours. They have a country. If they want legal representation, that country can provide it, not us. So it just, I don't get it, because you've got laws. When the left wants to ignore them, I guess the laws don't matter. And then when it's the right doing things, we are like obeying laws that don't exist. That's what I'm trying to say here. We are engaged in legal processes that are not prescribed by law and are not necessary. So why? Why are we doing that? It's all color of law stuff, right? It's all what happened during COVID, where it was like, you have to shut down your business. And it's just like, no, I don't, though. Where is the law? Show me the law. You can't just demand things and act like there's a law when there's not. There is no law that says we have to provide our resources to defend somebody who broke some foreigner who broke our laws to get into our country. This is so nonsensical. And it's like, again, the frustration. The frustration is really building. And I got to lay it at the feet of Trump, and so do Glenn Beck and Steve Bannon. So let's go to that video now. Here's Steve Beck and Glenn. Here's these two guys talking about Trump. Here it is.
It's the one thing they are furious about.
I'm pissed.
And Pam and Cash are as good as you get. What's the problem? Your audience the same way, they're steamed.
Oh, yeah. You know, you can do an awful lot of stuff, but until you start putting bad guys in jail, I don't believe you. I don't believe you.
And you know a sense of urgency. It's not like we have this forever.
No.
I mean, if Hakeem Jeffries wins in 18 months, which is not outside the possibility of raise $2
billion, we're done.
They're going to impeach Trump.
We're done. So where is the DOJ? Okay, I know Cash quite well. I believe Cash. I don't know Pam. Okay, that I'm not throwing dispersions on her, but something's not right. Why aren't you unleashing? Is it the deep state has them by the throat? What is it? But it's got to be solved. You have no.
Is that a message that you think you're, I don't want to get into your private conversation with the president, but is that something you would highlight that?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
You think there needs to be a sense of urgency about this?
What does any of it mean?
Why is Congress taking so much time off right now? Traditional 2 weeks of vacations or 2 weeks back to consider where they don't have town halls.
I don't know. I mean, it is.
Because collectively they're good people, but as a body.
They're horrible.
They're horrible.
Absolutely horrible. I honestly, Steve, I can't tell you. I am at a loss for DOJ and I'm at a loss for Congress and I'm at a loss on Donald Trump, man. Why aren't you using the bully pulpit to go after your own here? Eat them. Eat them. Tell them, oh, we're watching you. The whole country is watching you. Get to work. Do these things now. Have you seen the clock on the wall and the numbers spinning?
We're burning daylight.
Burning daylight.
The clock is ticking. And I could not agree more. And I think most people agree. And again, are getting frustrated at the prioritization of the Trump administration. Jim Jordan posted this yesterday. President Trump, American hostages home from the Middle East, deporting gangs and criminals that Democrats led into the country, protecting women's sports, getting the economy back on track, promises made, promises kept. And of course, the first response to that, Epstein arrest, J6 exposed, pipe bomber. Right? GOP majority Congress over 80 days off while Doge puts in 100-hour weeks, none of the Trump's EOs codified into law, no decrease in spending or the national debt, empty, strongly worded letters with zero action to back them up, no contempt of Congress charges for the Democrats who lied under oath to the House, no expulsion of Jamie Crockett from the House, no expulsion of AOC from the House for helping illegal aliens avoid detention and capture by ICE, passing a spending bill which funds USAID money laundering organizations, adding further insult to the GOP voters who put you in office, no rogue judges held accountable, no defunding, removal, or eradication of rogue district courts. Hint, if you folks don't get off your backsides and do something, there will be hell to pay in the next primary, and we'll tell you now to preserve all your records because we'll demand criminal charges against you for aiding and abetting criminal Democrats and opposing our will. You are not there to do your will. You're there to do ours. We've made it clear what it is, and you better step up the pace and stop the slow walking. We'll no longer tolerate your bait and switch tactics. You will pay a heavy legal price if you defy us this time around and now into the future. Which again, I don't know. The threats kind of ring hollow. I mean, it's like, well, these are the people that are supposed to be exacting vengeance for us and setting things right, and they're not. So, that like okay like the ne- the only next step is like popular uprising and just like sections of the country breaking off and rejecting federal oversight and just like splintering of the nation. I mean, if it can't get done now, it'll never get done. And I've said it a million times, but you look at history, you look at the great men of history, you look at people who have achieved things in history. The one characteristic they all share is impatience. Julius Caesar, Napoleon, George Washington. Although George Washington was pretty patient. But in terms of the great generals, Hannibal, all these people. In fact, Hannibal went down because he hesitated. Because he didn't do what was necessary and just take Rome when he had the chance. Then they deployed the Fabian strategy, which is kind of what the Democrats are doing now. That's actually a pretty apt historical comparison now that I think about it. Trump really is like Hannibal. I never thought about this. That's actually great. So, Hannibal, the Carthaginian general who led an army over the Alps, which is pretty much equivalent to, like, you talk about historical surprises, Hannibal dropping in on Roman territory from the north, like they never expected. Not unlike Trump's astonishing dual victories in the American elections. Totally surprising, totally existential threat for the ruling power, you know, the power structure. Massive victories. And then what happened with Hannibal is he basically was at Rome. He could have taken Rome, but he like got cold feet. He hesitated and he spent a lot of time trying to drive the Italian allies away from Rome and avoided just attacking Rome itself. So Rome deployed the Fabian strategy where they refused to confront Hannibal head on because their armies kept getting destroyed. And instead would just distract him and annoy him. And yeah, Rome never fell. Hannibal was defeated eventually. He had the bigger army. He was at their gates. He could have stormed the city and taken it, and he hesitated. It's probably why Hitler lost too. Hitler was terrified of repeating the, you know, historical blunder of Napoleon and other people as well. You know, with the Winter March, marching on Moscow, losing, you know, 4/5 of the Grand Army. He was terrified of repeating that, and so he never marched on Moscow, ended up getting bogged down in Leningrad or wherever it was, Stalingrad that was. So it's like if you look at history, what you see is the people who win, people who achieve incredible victories, are people like Napoleon or Caesar, who just acted with astonishing rapidity and never hesitated and never gave their enemies a chance to, you know, recombine and get their feet back under them. They just drove and pushed and pushed and pushed. They were there first every single time and just acted with initiative, kept their enemies on their back feet and achieved victory. If you look back in history at even great generals like Hannibal, one of the best of all time, he still got defeated because of hesitation, because he didn't just do what he needed to at that time. He decided to play the long game. Divert resources here, there, you know, hoping that something would come about. No, you just drive forward. You just drive forward until your victory is assured, and then you've won. I mean, so like that, and don't think it's, you know, you have to understand what we're talking about here is literally at that level. In the same way that we are talking about Hannibal 2,000 years later, people are going to be talking about what's happening right now 2,000 years from now. We are witnessing history as we speak. The timeline of humanity is being determined. Which way is it going to go? And it could all come down to a decision as simple as, do I march on Rome or do I not? Right? It's that coin flip. And all of history is different now. Imagine what, you know, history would be like if Rome fell to Hannibal and was, you know, burned to the ground and salted. I mean, Carthage doesn't exist anymore, right? It's where Tripoli was, but the Romans literally tore every stone down and then salted the earth so nothing could grow there again. Because that's how you achieve victory. Because that's how you become historical victors and reign supreme for hundreds of years beyond. You don't negotiate with the Carthaginians. You burn their city down and salt the land so nothing ever grows there again. Okay, you send a message. So hesitation is death, and we're hesitating. And that's frustrating. Ryan Matta responds to Representative Jim Jordan. Lock them up was the number one mandate we sent President Trump to Washington, D.C. To accomplish. We chanted it at every rally. It was played during every Trump intro trailer. Promises made, promises kept, my ace. The number one promise Trump made to us was to arrest the scumbags in Washington, D.C. until every penny Jim Jordan's family made over the last 30 years is audited by the IRS. I don't want to hear crap about promises made, promises kept. I can't help but agree. Just like the average person agrees. Brandon Morello posts, new poll, 44% of voters believe illegal aliens deserve due process. 61% of Dem voters support illegals getting due process. Two things about this. First of all, the majority is in the camp of, yeah, just get them out of here. What are you talking about, due process? But the other thing is, I point out, that word due, D-U-E, means the only process actually due to these people is confirming that they're not American citizens. That is the due process, right? The due process of getting gas is putting your card in the thing and pulling it out and typing in your PIN number and holding the lever. That is the due that is the process necessary to achieve filling your car with gas. That's all that means. Due process doesn't intrinsically require two lawyers, one arguing for, one arguing against, a judge to decide, a jury impaneled. That's due process for an American citizen being charged with a crime. These are non-American invaders who should be deported. The due process is putting them on a plane. So that's the due process. So yes, they, you know, I agree. The migrants do deserve due process. The due process they deserve is hands behind the back, sir. Just walk forward. Goodbye forever. That is the due process they deserve. And I'm sick of all of the excuses. I'm sick of it. J.D. Vance had a statement about the Abrego Garcia issue, which, again, all of this circulates around. And news stories are coming out. I think I actually just had it up here. But basically, there's more and more stuff coming out about this. The Maryland man, the Maryland man who was actually an El Salvadorian man who was caught in a van with a bunch of human traffickers. And that's the big story today. So this is the mascot of the Democrats, I guess, now. It's all absurd how we're treating this guy like a like an American citizen. I won't say like a human being, but does he deserve it? Here's J.D. Vance talking about this situation.
Omar Abrego Garcia's wife has been very vocal about how she doesn't think he's getting due process, and she now also fears for her safety. Do you have a message to her specifically?
Well, I don't have a message to his wife. I mean, look, I just disagree with the idea that he hasn't been offered due process. He had a couple of immigration hearings. He had a valid deportation order. I think this idea that somehow that we couldn't deport an MS-13 gang member, and he was an MS-13 gang member, is preposterous. And I think there's actually a deeper issue going on, which is that you see some radical judges at the district court level who are trying to layer so much quote-unquote process on top of the immigration system that it makes it impossible to function. We have over 20 million illegal aliens in the United States of America. Are we not allowed to deport them? Because if we're not allowed to deport them, then what these district courts are saying is fundamentally they reject the will of the American people as it was expressed in November of 2024. We just reject that. I believe the American people elected President Trump to do many jobs, but perhaps the most important job was to bring down the number of illegal immigration in this country. That's what he's trying to do. We're going to keep on doing it.
Yeah, again, I'm just sort of torn with all this stuff because I have no objections to everything that he said. It's the tone. Remember Trump used to always say, he always goes, the tone. You've got a bad tone. It's the tone I don't like. It's the, if we're not allowed to do that, then he's going against the will of the people. No, it's not even the will of the people. It's the law. They're going against the law. And you don't have to get permission of them. You're the president and vice president of the United States. Like, just do it. Just do it. Honestly, we will deal with the fallout. Don't worry about it. I mean, it needs, and for, like, they understood this in the first couple of weeks of Trump's administration. Remember, it was the flood the zone strategy. What happened to that? All the flood waters have gone. They've all been drained. The zone is no longer flooded. What happened to flood the zone? They've been focused on this Kilmar Abrego jackass for like a week now. There should be another Kilmar Abrego Garcia every 12 hours. They wouldn't be able to cause all the trouble about it if every 12 hours there's a new one. They're like, oh my God, there's more. And it's like, yeah, well, sorry, we're doing it again. Look, there's another one. Hey, we're sending another one out. You want to pay attention to him too? Go make a fuss about him. While you're filing, appeals about this guy's deportation, we deported 10,000 people. That's how it needs to go. Where is the impatience? Where is the urgency? Stop asking permission from your enemies.
I don't hype things. If I tell you something is amazing, it's because it is. I've taken methylene blue off and on for 6 years since my medical doctor told me to get USP. That means pharmaceutical grade. You can get it, you know, online. And then I noticed that I got some effect. It's good for your mitochondria, energy, with no letdown. Because it's not a stimulant. It just gets the electrical operations in your cells working better, similar to iodine, but in a different way and stronger. And then when I got this medical grade, I noticed it was way thicker and way stronger. And so we got a bunch of other brands ordered last week. And what I thought was true, and listeners already figured this out themselves. I noticed a bunch of testimonials on X where they got these other brands and they're not deep, dark, navy blue and thick. It's just a bright blue. Some of them is like a baby blue on paper. And that's exactly what I thought. They're saying it's USP. A lot of it isn't USP. And it's watered down. So I'm not just saying this because, oh, we've got the best, so you should get it from us. I told the guys, go out and find the best. And they went and did their research, and I kind of got pissed because it took them, I was telling them 6 months to go get methylene blue. But turned out they got the place that makes a bunch of the pharmaceutical grade because they also use it in surgeries. So that's why theirs has got to be absolutely the best. It gets tested a bunch. It's very strong. Most people get blown away. Everybody feels the energy. The workouts are so good. It's amazing. And a lot of bodybuilders, I've now learned, mix it with vitamin C powder and things. So get your Ultra, that's the brand name, private label, one of the top firms in the country, Ultra Methylene Blue at thealexjonesstore.com. And I asked listeners that aren't into methylene blue, try it out, test it against yours. They're like, yeah, mine's is USP too. It's not as dark, not as thick. When it comes out, you know, raw in the bottle. And wow, this is way strong. So we really hit a big one on this. Just like our Irish sea moss is rated the strongest, our Shilajit is rated the best, the turmeric's the highest quality, the strongest. I mean, that's what we go for. And then when we find a better supplier, we move, and then we call it Plus, because under the regulations and things, you reformulate, you have to change the name. You just say Plus, Plus, Plus. So most of our products have a Plus on it, because over the years, we just upgrade. Because see, I want to bring you the best, because I take this, and I treat you like I want to be treated. I was born like this. I'm an old line Texan. It's all about hospitality. We're real nice till you mess with us, and then we're real mean. And I love you guys. You've kept me in the fight. This is our fight together. Thank you for all you've done. If you're a listener that's never gone to thealexjonesstore.com and checked out the widest selection of Patriot apparel, gotten the incredible game-changing supplements, and more, what are you waiting for? Become a VIP for $30 a month. Cancel any time. Get $40 to spend the store each month. Special deals, special offers. Everybody that's going to support us and get great products should be a VIP at thealexjonesstore.com. Also, it sells out sometimes. Any product you want to have, subscribe to it. Get bigger discounts. It never sells out.
Yo, I just got the Ultra Methylene Blue from thealexjonesstore.com. Got two bottles here. I'm going to try it out. Shake it up a little bit. Just got back from work, and I'm feeling tired, but I'm going to try it out. See what happens.
Old-fashioned artillery. Genius.
I'm going to do 15 drops. It says 20 drops, but I'm going to do 15. So I took my methylene blue, and I feel good. My skin feels warm. It feels like my blood's flowing better, or something's happening anyway. Something's definitely happening to me, and it feels good.
Oh, God almighty.
You're watching The American Journal. Watch live right now at band.video.
All right, welcome back, folks. We've got some developments between Russia and Ukraine. Obviously, a major attack by Russia yesterday following some statements from Zelensky, which makes peace seem ever further from being achieved. We'll get into all of that and a lot more, but just in general on the topic of impatience and just understanding, comprehending, and acting like you understand the situation that we're in and the severity of the situation, the urgency it requires. Claire Lehman on X said, remember, whatever tactics or weapons you introduce into battle will be used by your enemies one day, which isn't true. we've discovered through our experimentation that in fact they just wield those weapons anyway, whether or not we do it. And then when they do it, we don't. So this whole reciprocal don't set the precedent thing, it doesn't work if one side doesn't worry about setting precedents and does whatever it wants whenever it wants, and our side does not match the precedent even when it's set. So
We can stop this talking point. We can stop acting like we're in a debate club where the rules matter anymore. We can just stop pretending. Okay? It's a lovely fantasy that the Democrats are restrained by, you know, previous action precedent. It's very cute. It's a very cute idea. But we've lived in America for the last 10 years. We know that's not true. But this is in response to this, this thing. Trump supporters are currently cheering his war on universities. Are we? Are we though? But his administration's actions are setting a precedent that may be emulated by subsequent administrations. A radical progressive administration may decide to use the same financial threats to strong-arm universities into abandoning viewpoint diversity, reinstating DEI, and letting corrupt academics run wild if they have the approved politics. Well, this, again, they literally already did that, so what are you talking about? But fine. Yeah, they might do it again. If universities are to retain their independence so they can live up to what's best in their history, they'll need to be regulated by stable independent authority rather than the changing whims of passing executive governments. And this is, again, the most frustrating part about all of this. And I was talking to some people online about this. If Trump was just firing on all cylinders, achieving, you know, everything that we want him to, and he was going after the universities over anti-Israeli protests, I really wouldn't care. We wouldn't care. I'll speak for a lot of us. It might be a thing where we're like, well, you probably shouldn't do that, but it wouldn't be an issue. It wouldn't be something that made us mad. If every week the Trump administration was publishing a list of 20,000 people that they got out of the country. I mean, remember, there were days during the Biden administration where 10 to 20,000 people crossed the border. There was a single days. All right. Reporting a couple hundred or even thousand people a month. I mean, this is stupid. This literally needs to be a huge scale military operation. We need to be seeing tens of thousands of deportations at least a month, but a week really, if we want to actually make a dent. Okay. So if the situation was every week, 20,000 illegals were being expelled, and they were going after anti-Israeli protesters, I really wouldn't care. Nobody would say anything. We'd be happy. If, on the other hand, we were getting neither, and sure, the deportations were happening at the current pace. It was a little bit slow, but they were getting things done, and, you know, nothing else was happening. Then we'd be impatient. We'd want them to hurry up, but we wouldn't be mad. It's the combination. It's the insult of nothing being done for us and everything being done for Israel. That's the frustrating part. Do we understand this? If just one of these things existed independently, it would be a completely different story. It is an insult. So the American people are looking around going, where the hell is our representation? Where are the people fighting for us? Where are the extraordinary measures being taken for us? They're willing to take extraordinary measures. They're willing to bankrupt Harvard for Israel. Oh, but they can't shut up a district court to expel illegal immigrants for us? It's infuriating. And it's only going to get worse if it's not dealt with. If our issues aren't dealt with, the American people's issues aren't dealt with. By the way, do you think this is working? Do you think that arresting protest leaders at Columbia is succeeding? I'll tell you it's not. You know, yesterday a bunch of protesters chained themselves to the gates of Columbia. There's another thing today. Columbia University students are now planning to set up tent encampments this week in protests in support of Gaza, according to NBC News. It's not going to stop. This is America. Americans know their rights. You're not going to bully them or threaten them into abandoning their deeply held political convictions. Now, it would have been nice to see the American government, like, try to do that during gigantic, you know, destructive riots that went on for months on end in 2020 while they were simultaneously locking us down in de facto martial law. It would have been nice to see National Guard members going out and protecting businesses from being burned down. It would have been nice to see some sort of response at that point, because that actually could have had an impact on the violence devastation that was being wrought. But kids at Columbia protesting are not going to be cowed by these threats or by their administration. So it's not even working. So it's like, not only are resources and energy and conflict and all this stuff coming up for something that just does not serve the American people at all, even a little bit. You can try to make the argument if you're a liar, but it just there's nothing about this that benefits the American people. And yet that's where the energy is going. That's where they're having massive success. That's where they're not caring about setting precedent or, you know, violating norms or anything of the sort. They're just doing it. And again, I've said it over and over, and it just time and time again, it crops up. And it always happens to be around Israel, which is why it always comes up. But you've seen it all around other things. I mean, COVID is the other one, right? They just did it. They just do things totally against the law, totally violating our just most basic fundamental rights. They never even brooked conversation about it. You couldn't even object to it. They'd kick you off the internet. They just did it. So it's not that we're like frustrated that it's going so slow because we're mad at the system that's slowing it down. We know that's a lie. We know that this is all an illusion. We know what the government can do when it wants to. We know how it can act when it feels it has an interest to protect. It's an insult that our life and our well-being and our country's existence doesn't seem to rise to that level of concern. Not the priority for them. And again, it's not even going to stop these students. The students are going to keep protesting. They're actually probably just going to ramp it up. And you're pretty much proving them right. Again, it's like these people, it's just confirmation of what they already believe, that Israel controls American foreign politics and is using it to carry out a genocide. And you see the way these people are being treated. You see the way like Harvard as an institution is being talked about, where there's like, I mean, they're, you know, the way they talk about Harvard is the exact same way they talk about the universities in Gaza right before they get flattened and leveled and kill all the children hiding inside. And so again, you've got people like Claire Lehman. Remember, whatever tactics or weapons you introduce to the battlefield will one day be used by your enemies. Here's a great response to this from Christian Hines. Short of civil war, name me one single tactic that the left has not employed against us over just the last decade alone. They've hijacked and politicized every institution in the country against us. They've stoked riots, murdered their political opposition, flooded our country with billions of future voters, impeached our president twice, removed state laws to allow him to be taken to court, tried to bankrupt him, kick him off ballot, and throw him in prison. They've staged two assassination attempts against him, weaponized federal enforcement against us, and justified all of this because they believe straight white men need to be erased from history. The idea that we may be the ones crossing the line here is laughable. The left declared total war on half the country over a decade ago. If there's something these people have not done, it's only because they've concluded they can't get away with it yet. And now, finally, after the left spent a decade of punching us in the face with utter impunity, the right has thrown a single punch back and people want to moralize about the danger of going too far. I do not care anymore. These people will get theirs. What do we not get about this? How do we get this message to the people in charge? Because they all seem to get it 96 days ago. The day before inauguration, Kash Patel and Pam Bondi and Dan Bongino, I mean, they all seem to understand all of this. So what happened? Now, if I was the deep state, what I would be doing is just diverting them. And that's the only way I can explain this, while not just believing these people are just supreme grifters. Kash Patel is like, I'm going to close the FBI building and make it a museum day one. Okay, it's day 93, and I can't tell a single thing that's been done with the FBI. There's been like a few people who've lost their security clearances. Okay. None of them are in jail. None of the operations have been slowed down or curtailed in any way. So, I mean, the only options we have are just like, it was a complete scam from the beginning. Or I think what's probably actually happening is you've got the deep state people in there going, oh man, Cash, you're so right. We so need to do all of this. I mean, there are some hurdles, there are some obstacles, but we're going to show you how to navigate those. We're going to get this done. We're on your side. We're just as frustrated as you are. And then they just are just sort of, you know, carrot and sticking him along, just sort of like, yeah, no, we'll keep, don't worry. Any day now, we'll get this done. And just waylaying and delaying. And that's the only thing I can assume. And as Glenn Beck said in that statement, like, why aren't they even just using the bully pulpit? I mean, why is this so hard for them? Why is Trump not doing an X Spaces every Friday night? Or something like that. Why is he not, you know, getting up and giving press conferences where he just completely changes the course of the narrative? I mean, they're still writing stories about Pete Hegseth, trying to get him kicked out. Every day, there's new stories. Every day, oh, chaos reigns. Today, the story was, I think it was from the Washington Post, and it was, you know, now that I've looked at Pete Hegseth, I think he may have broken the law. I mean, I don't think this is just a scandal of impropriety. I think there may be legal issues here. This could get really serious. It's like, why are we letting them do this? What are we doing? What are we doing? If someone can explain it to me, and that's the other thing, you know, there's this really great guy. I see him on YouTube all the time. I've talked about him before. He's a marketing guy. He always talks about like reframing. And I've actually probably told this exact story on the air before, but reframing people's perceptions. And like my favorite story of his is that Britain spent like billions of dollars to try to make a train trip shorter, and they made it like 30 minutes shorter. They spent like $4 billion and they made this train trip across the English Channel 30 minutes shorter. They thought it was too long. And this YouTube guy will go, $4 billion to make a train 30 minutes shorter? Give me $4 billion. I'll hire models to go around dispensing free champagne for everybody on the train, and they'll want the train trip to be longer. Right? It's not that the train trip is too long. It's that their perception is that the train trip is too long. If you can make the train trip nice, then they'll actually enjoy it and they won't care about how long it is. But he's always talking about reframing discussion. Shoot, I had a reason I was bringing him up, and then I got up on the train story and forgot why I was saying it. The something about the Hegseth thing. Yeah. Anyway, that is what Trump is good at, right? Reframing the conversation, reframing the perspective people have. Oh yeah. I remember. One of the things he always harps on is like, people will wait a long time if they know how long they're going to wait. So, you know, he talks about like, if you order pizza online, it gives you the little tracker telling you exactly where your pizza is and where it's going, or Uber Eats or whatever. You can see the little car going. And as long as you're showing people that movement is happening, then they'll wait. As long as you show, like, tell people, hey, it's going to, you know, if you tell people it's going to be 10 minutes and it turns out being 15, they're going to be pissed. If you tell people it's going to be 20 minutes and it turns out 15, they're going to be happy. It's still 15 minutes. That didn't change, but people's response to it changes because you manage their perspective, their perception of it. So the frustrating thing for me is like, I don't see anything on the horizon. I don't see Trump and his people coming out and giving us concrete developments about what's happening, how it's unfolding, what the ultimate goal is, where the deadline will be, when the trials will start. There's nothing. There's no, you know, ticking clock going, here's the step that we're at, here's the step after that, here's the step after that, here's where they go to jail. If they would just lay out what's happening, maybe it is, because that's the thing. Maybe, you know, maybe all these vague hints of just like, oh, things take time, you know, don't worry, things are happening. It's like, no, we didn't fall for QAnon the first time, we're not falling for it this time, okay? We're not trusting the plan. We're not waiting and see. We're not sitting back and relaxing so the white hats can take control. We are demanding that you do something right now that's tangible and apparent and that we can talk about and sink our teeth into and understand. We're getting nothing. We're getting nothing right now. Unless I'm missing it, I don't see any developments. And the developments that we do hear about turn out to be lies, right? Because we hear, oh, God, the Epstein files are on my desk. Well, they weren't, though. Well, no, now they've been delivered in a truck. Really? That was 2 months ago. Oh, there's 10,000 FBI agents, pouring through this stuff to redact it any day now. It's been a month. So not only are we in general not getting updates or projections into the future, here's where we're going, here's how long it's going to take. When we are getting things like that, they're lies. So what are we doing? Where are Trump's priorities? How is it that these people who, like, we're friends with, who are, like, they're in our sphere, they were dissident right podcasters 2 months ago, they get into office and it's just like no communication. They suddenly have just like a completely different mindset. Again, Pam Bondi goes on Fox News 2 times a day, isn't achieving anything. It's not there to unveil a new slate of charges that she's laying on the Democrats. Again, like, we just, I mean, I don't know, man. It's just, it's right there. The like Napoleon said, right? The crown is in the gutter. Somebody's got to pick it up. We know how the left would do it, right? And I hesitate to even say this because it's just such a cuck mentality of just like, if this was the left, but it's true. I mean, January 6th, a couple people wandered through the Capitol, didn't kill anybody. They were killed. It was brutal. It was all a setup. We all knew that, but not that big of a deal, actually. By a week after Biden was inaugurated, they had the sedition hunters. They had billboards up with people's faces saying, have you seen this domestic terrorist? They were rounding people. They literally called it a shock and awe campaign to target first the influential people and the social media people that were there as a psychological operation on top of the physical rounding up of thousands of their political opponents, regular citizens who never broke a law. So I don't have to speculate about what the left would do if they were in Trump's position. Again, this is the frustrating part. We know how it can be done. So where is the special committee? Where is the equivalent of the January 6th committee holding prime time trials of high profile people, laying out the case to the American people? Here's what's been done to us. Here's how we're going to punish them. And then sending SWAT teams to their home at 3 a.m. to kick their door down and haul them away at gunpoint. That's what they did to us. They did that. Not speculation. This isn't like I'm not saying here's what's going to happen in the future. Oh, you just wait. No, it already happened. So what are we doing? So just where are the people in charge? I can't do this. People listening to my voice, we can't be the ones to do this. It has to be from the top or else it is going to be civil war. And that's not possible because of our geopolitical opponents. So my God, here's a story I was talking about from J.D. Vance was discussing. Deported alleged MS-13 gangbanger Kilmar Abrego Garcia was driving convicted smuggler's car during Tennessee traffic stop. Deported alleged MS-13 gangbanger Kilmar Abrego Garcia was driving a convicted human smuggler's car when he was stopped by cops while transporting a group of men on a Tennessee highway in 2022. The Department of Homeland Security confirmed Wednesday. Abrego Garcia, 29, was pulled over by a Tennessee state trooper in 2022 for speeding. But when the cop stumbled upon the Salvadorian illegal immigrant with 8 others and no luggage amid their days-long trip from Texas to Maryland, he suspected something was amiss, according to an internal memo obtained by the Post last week. Well, he must have been a racist. He was probably one of those racist cops. He was like a brown man driving, not in Tennessee. Or maybe it has something to do with 8 people in a small car traveling for days with no luggage. Why do we allow people to get away with this? What is wrong with our country? At the time, the alleged gangbanger, who was deported by the Trump administration last month, claimed that his packed SUV was owned by his boss at a construction job, who turned out to be Jose Ramon Hernandez Reyes, an illegal migrant previously convicted of smuggling others into the U.S., Just the News first reported. The mascot of the Democrats. Look, I don't want to I don't want to say things that I'll regret, but I'll just say it wouldn't be an issue if he was dead. It wouldn't be an issue if he was dead. They'd have to shut up about Kilmar Abrego Garcia if he was given capital punishment in an expedited fashion. Why are we playing these games? Why are there people named Hernando Garcia Abrego Reyes caught trafficking humans and not immediately decapitated for crimes against the state? I mean, are we a country? Why are they in this country at all? Why are we acting like we owe them any consideration? Why? And again, this is kind of like I was having a conversation with Alex Stringer yesterday. He was talking about the woke right and the, you know, people on the right wing obsessed with like race and all this stuff. And it's like, you know, it doesn't start that way. You know, none of us started with like, kill the immigrants. But at a certain point, but you understand that like when our really normal, easy to accomplish requests are spit back in our face, we tend to become more extreme. When our very simple, non-complicated, normal demands are treated like outrageous and how dare we even ask, I mean, what do you think people are going to say? Like, hey, do you mind getting all these illegal immigrants out? And they're just like, nope, no, we can't do it. Not in a million years. Then we're just going to be like, no, we need to get them out. And I don't care how now. Right. In the same way, when it comes to the woke right, it's like, hey, can you stop actively demonizing white people? Like really blatantly right to our faces. And they're just like, oh, white tears, huh? Boo hoo, white man. And we're just like, okay, I guess we hate you now. Right. It doesn't start off on the extremes. It gets to the extremes because very reasonable requests are denied and you're slapped in the face for even asking. We are not asking extraordinary things. We are not demanding precedent-setting evolutions of the United States Constitution. We are demanding that basic law and order be applied. That just very basic, necessary, prerequisite for having a country, laws are followed, criminals are jailed, foreigners are expelled, the corrupt are imprisoned. That's all that we want. We don't get that, it's gonna get worse. So it's not like we're just begging at this point. Just do the right thing. Just expel these people. Stop giving these, I mean, just imagine the world that could be if Trump had just a modicum of the drive that the left has.
All right, this is a review for the Ultra Methylene Blue from the Alex Jones store. Usually don't do reviews like this, but just wanted to compare it to this Earth Harmony Ultimate Methylene Blue. And so basically I've been taking the Earth Harmony for a while until Alex Jones came out with the Ultra Methylene Blue. And I must say that it does a damn good job. I noticed about 15 minutes ago, I took 10 drops of the Ultimate Methylene Blue, which is about 5 milligrams. And within that 15-minute period, definitely noticed my focus, cognition increased, good energy right now. I'm a practicing dentist, so I have more patients to treat coming up. So I'm always looking for that afternoon boost without the slump. And so it definitely helps if you want that good extra boost, especially midday, and you don't want that slump like you might get from taking caffeine or other stimulants, you'll definitely get it. I will say that the Earth Harmony, it did do a good job. There is no flavor with Earth Harmony. It had that kind of bitter taste to it. So what I do like about the Alex Jones Ultimate Methylene Blue is you have a nice flavor. It's like a mild mint vanilla. It's not overpowering. It doesn't taste like mouthwash. It's a very nice subtle flavor. And then also the efficiency of it. I notice it kicks in a little bit quicker. And so we'll see how long it lasts. And then I'll see how my sleep is tonight as well too. And then like I said too, with the USP grade, we know for sure that we're getting USP grade. I know Earth Harmony does say it is USP grade. But again, too, you know, I don't know specifically. They could be,
for sure. I'm not sure, but I'm just giving you my take on it. I would definitely recommend the Alex Jones Methylene Blue here. It's great stuff. So thank you, Alex. Keep it coming, and we'll see everyone soon.
Eat the bugs, you'll own nothing, be happy. A bust of Lenin on his desk. He first resigns as the chairman. He's still on the board. Then he gets off the board a month ago, and I said, watch, I predict he'll be completely gone and kicked out of it. Following my recent announcement that I am into my 88th year, I have decided to step down from the position of chair as a member of the Board of Trustees with imminent effect. He's out of the WEF because all the big money's cut off by Trump. He was getting out of USAID and the EPA and other groups. And people don't want to go to it now. And attendance is way down because it's identified as an enemy.
To bring people together for an informal dialogue in a remote Swiss village such as Davos can be or should be a good recipe to restore trust.
Oh, 2 years ago, the UN had a resolution, not by the General Assembly, but by the real corporate board of the UN, to make it co-equal with the UN in all policy. Well, it was always really that, the mouth of the globalists, where the real decisions were being made. And then more importantly, it's just Bilderberg's public mouth. It then makes the statements and externalizes the plan for global governance and has their big global government conferences.
So people assume we are just going back to the good old world which we had and everything will be normal again. This is, let's say, fiction. It will not happen.
We have to understand that these are people that are very smart, they're very well resourced, yep. And they have a very sort of strategic idea of how they want to see the world develop. And God and a soul are not part of that strategy.
You expose their project, and as it goes from beta to operational in 2020, it'll be so horrible, everyone will turn against it. I said that thousands of times the last two decades, and it happened. All the corporate media would do is say, oh, it doesn't exist. There's no global government. There's no new world order. There's no global governance conferences. There's no plan to ban your gas stoves and cut your son's genitals off. There's no plan to ban most farming.
We can't get to net zero. We don't get this job done unless agriculture is front and center as part of the solution.
There's no plan to get rid of the borders. Yeah, there is. There's no plan to use viruses for total control. Yeah, there are. We named them all. That when they finally took off the mask and went from Operation Agenda 21 to Agenda 2030 in 2020, like they said they would. I mean, they said in all those documents, the SPARS 2020 and Operation Lockstep and the actual treaty plan, we are going to go operational in 2020. I kept telling you, if you think stuff's been bad so far, you just wait till 2020. And they say their main thing will be a new virus.
This pandemic has provided an opportunity for a reset. This is our chance to accelerate our pre-pandemic efforts to reimagine economic systems that actually address global challenges like extreme poverty, inequality, and climate change.
At the end, what the fourth industrial revolution will lead to is a fusion of our physical, our digital, and our biological identities.
Oh, let's put a new head globalist in that looks and acts like a James Bond villain. I am Peter Bobek Lathmeth. I have a right to rule. I am the Ubermensch. I am the Superman. I am the leader. I control you. We will kill you. We'll kill you with the shots and the food. We cut it all off. So we sit on mountaintop with prostitutes and our private jets like fat pigs selling you. We send out Obama to Africa to tell them, you don't get car, air conditioning, you kill the earth. We're going to teach all of you to starve and die. We are superior to you. There's nothing you can do to stop us. Klaus Schwab fully leaving is because they think that'll give them a makeover. No, it won't. The WEF is irrevocably destroyed and convicted for crimes against humanity and conspiring for a global technocracy, for pushing an anti-human depopulation agenda. But now we're into their counter-response. So this is a race to finish them off politically, to destroy them in the public eye. Don't just destroy Bill Gates. Don't just destroy Klaus Schwab. Go after all of their kingpins, all of their mouthpieces. Politically expose them. Folks, I'm not funded by any big corporations or anybody. I am funded by viewers and listeners because over the years they would target our sponsors and threaten them and take them away. We direct sell high quality products, supplements, mementos, collectible knives, Patriot gear at thealexjonesstore.com. But the supplements are some of the best you're going to find anywhere. And we have this new product that boosts your immune system with all the known concentrated herbs and compounds. Atomic defense, meaning, you know, nuke the bad guys, boost your immune system ahead of all the things that are going on. It's so good for you. The ingredients are incredible. It's our newest product at thealexjonesstore.com. And then it funds our operation as a political, cultural, spiritual immune system to fight the globalist, a true 360 win. And out of the gates, it's 40% off introductory offer. You take this, it's good for your whole body. You take it all the time, but particularly in the fall and winter, everybody needs atomic defense. thealexjonesstore.com.
You're listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We still have a lot to talk about, including Supreme Court hearings, about whether or not you are permitted to stop perverts from indoctrinating your children, determining whether you have that right or not. Asha just went into the break room on Fox. They were showing an Illinois couple. The husband is a nuclear scientist, living like the nicest neighborhood in Illinois. They have ring camera footage of them being held up at gunpoint by like four different guys who followed them home on the highway. And I just want to make the point again. If you can't walk outside your front door without being jacked by an armed gang, you're not free. Okay. You actually don't have liberty if you can't walk outside of your house without being attacked and robbed and possibly killed. Especially knowing that in all likelihood, people who killed you would completely get away. Here's the footage. Good job, crew. Yeah, stripping them down on their front porch. So they're not free, right? Police have made no arrests. They have no persons of interest. Just, you know, four black dudes from Chicago. Do you recognize them? Okay, so you're not free in a country where you can't go outside your front door. Take everything. Ring can captures moment. Suburban couple robbed at gunpoint. So, I mean, there's only two options here. Either the government steps up and protects people by arresting these people and actually getting serious about law and order and actually sending these people away, or the rich start to gate themselves off and we have to just go full South Africa. Maybe we need to get in South Africa today. Maybe we need to show where this goes. Again, nothing. And this is like the most important thing I think people need to understand. The destruction is not a possibility. It's a certainty without intervention. It's not that like we risk suddenly going on a trajectory towards destruction. We are on that trajectory. Okay. We're on the trajectory of South Africa. We are on the trajectory of total destruction. Europe destroyed, America destroyed, World War III, mass deaths. Like that is the trajectory that we're on. If we don't do anything, that is not a possibility. It's an inevitability. We have to intervene. We have to change the trajectory. Not little bit by bit, not piece by piece, like in a very powerful, we need a very powerful inflection to go to a different direction, because right now we are on that trajectory and nothing is being done to change that direction. We have more talk. And okay, let's get into that right now, because I got Ukraine. I got all this other news I will get to. But yesterday I had a bunch of videos, so I'll drag those in, because I think you need to understand another aspect of the situation in which we now find ourselves, is that escape is impossible. I think it's important to understand, because there's a habit, particularly for white people, of white flight. At a certain point, you can't run away anymore. At a certain point, that is no longer possible. And really, it's pervasive. And this is the conditioning. At least that's how I see it. When Alex says break the conditioning, there's such a thing as learned helplessness. As present in all living creatures, they've done experiments with, like dogs. If you think that you're helpless, you won't even try. They'll do other things. We'll have a jar of fleas that are trying to hop out of the jar, but if the jar has a top and they can't hop out, after like a couple minutes, you can remove the top and they'll never hop out. Even though they could jump higher than the edge of the jar, they just won't, because they think that they can't. So there's this conditioning that has been imposed on us. People, I don't even think, recognize that they're doing it, but you've been conditioned to surrender. You've been conditioned to accept defeat. Conditioned to think that things can only go to the left, that any attempt to take an organization or an institution or a country the opposite direction is folly, it's a fool's errand, it'll never happen, you might as well not even try. And I gotta say, in terms of our enemies, it's a brilliant strategy, it's a brilliant tactic, it's what I would want the condition to be. I mean, how amazing is that? That your enemies don't even try to fight. You can just do things to your enemies, and their instinctual response is to submit immediately and run away. You can just do whatever you want then. Yeah, you want to indoctrinate little kids into homosexuality in kindergarten? You can just do that. Instead of fighting back, instead of standing up against it, instead of getting outraged and pissed and angry and possibly violent, the people will just go, oh, well, that's just crazy. Anyway. Right? I mean, that's how they've conditioned you. That is the conditioning. You've been conditioned to accept this. You've been conditioned to think that you can't fight back. And people argue with me about this all the time from our side. About Harvard is the latest example. Where I'm like, and it's the funniest thing. Because I'm sitting here going, hey guys, we shouldn't just give up Harvard. It's the number one university in the world. It's been American for longer than America has been around. I like American history. I like our heritage. That is a major component of our heritage. The incredible universities that America founded that produced the most brilliant scientists in the world who changed everything. So I want to seize that. I want that back. That's ours. That's our fort. It's being occupied by our enemies. We need to recapture it. And I've everybody in my comments going, nah, it's a libtard thing. We'll just forget about it. And she's like, well, was it always? And it's like, well, no, it used to actually be pretty conservative. Okay, well, what happened? Oh, well, liberals infiltrated and changed it. Okay, well, then let's do that. Like, what are you talking about? How is it possible to go one way and not the other? Of course you can. And of course, the most ironic thing is people are going, how do you think you could possibly change the, you know, it's too lost, it's too far gone, just get rid of it. How could you possibly change the institutional, you know, entropy of this university? It's like, they're literally doing it right now for Israel. What do you mean, what would you do? You withhold their funding until they make the changes you demand. It's not hard. It's literally being done right now. They're actively doing it. It's just not for us. It's just not to actually regain the, institution, it's to stop people speaking out against genocide. But, you know, it's the same tactic. So it's just so funny to me. People act like this is impossible to do while we're talking about how it's already being done. Crazy. Crazy how this happens. And so people think you can't change. People think you can't stand up against this tide. People think you have to just run away. And it happens again just constantly. Oh, your neighborhood's becoming too violent. Go out to the suburbs. Oh, the suburbs are too violent now. Well, better go live in the country. Oh, your kid is being taught perversion in elementary school. Better just keep him out of class that day. Better just homeschool. Better just take on the burden of your child's education. Better not, you know, be allowed to take advantage of the free education we offer in this country. You exclude yourself from that because you refuse to speak up against what's being taught to your children. Just like stop running away, stop surrendering, stop giving up, break the conditioning, get out of the mindset that this is all impossible to confront or redress, and confront and redress it. Please, for the love of God, because the end result of running away is you get conquered. Because eventually you can't run away anymore. Eventually they come for you. Even in your little town. Even in your rural area. You think they're going to leave you alone? Do you think that eventually, if you just run away far enough, they'll look at you over there with your nice community, your safe streets, and they'll say, good for them. Hey, they're over there. They're not bothering us. We're not bothering them. God bless. You think they're going to say that? Do you really think that's the mindset of these people? There's no getting away from these people. There's nowhere you can go where they're going to leave you alone. So start with that understanding and work backwards. Okay. So what else? What else do you need to do? Again, none of this is speculation. People may have heard of it. There's a place in South Africa called Oranje. Oranje is a white-only town which has its own government in South Africa. And basically, I think it actually started a little bit before apartheid ended. But when apartheid ended, they just set up an independent state, essentially. And so we don't want anything to do with what's happening in South Africa. We don't want anything to do with the Rainbow Coalition, this neo-communistic inverted apartheid that you're doing. We don't want anything to do with that. You can do it. Go ahead. You know, destroy your own country. Steal the copper out of the electrical wires. Revert yourself back to barbarism and starve. You're welcome to do that. We're going to be over here continuing to operate a functional society. So let's go to clip number 7 here. This is what Oranje looks like. And hey, it's been thriving. It's been successful. They haven't bothered anybody. So obviously now there's a massive push in the South African government to destroy it. You can't escape this. So I know some people, even in America, look to Oranje and go, oh, we could do that. We could have our own independent state, their own systems, and own, like, we don't need anything from anybody else. We can produce our own electricity and harvest our own food. We can do it all ourselves. And we'll just be left alone. No, you won't. You will never be left alone. You will never get away. Stop trying. Stop trying to run away, please. Let's go to clip number 7 here. This is Oranje.
Hidden deep in the northern Cape of South Africa is a controversial town like no other. A place that has no black residents, where only white Afrikaners call home, and it has been in existence since 1991. Even after the feared apartheid regime that segregated black South Africans.
Oranje is a whites-only town. Black people cannot live or work here. Every job is reserved for the whites.
Do I believe that places like Oranje should exist? No. Do I believe that Oranje is racist? Of course.
The white Afrikaners' only community of Oranje got their own currency, their own flag, their own government, and make their own policies.
Right here in Oranje, we have our own private security company.
And of course, we have our own airstrip here in Oranje.
In Oranje, we're building a city, so we have our own construction company.
Have you ever sold property to anyone who is not African speaking?
No.
If I have money, how much you sell? If I have money, you're saying I can't buy?
No.
Because I am African.
It seems the long-term goal is to cut off from South Africa to build a white-only country.
Let me ask you, if you had your way to make Oranje its own country, would you contribute to that?
Yes, I think it would be nice.
Above all, I am here to investigate what drives a community to build life completely separate from the country around them. And if these people are truly practicing racial segregation in South Africa.
Yeah, they want to separate themselves from the country that's around them because the country that's around them is run by a government that encourages murdering people on the basis of their race, and they are that race. Why would you want to separate yourself from this country? And it's just everything collapsing, just war zone, murder, you know, gasoline fires, necklacing, state-sponsored murder of farmers, brutally pouring boiling water down your throat till you die. And it's like, well, you don't want to be a part of this. It's called the Rainbow Coalition. It's the disemboweled body of your next door neighbor hanging from a flagpole. What we're seeing here, folks, America, 20, what do you give it? 50? Do we have till 2050 till we're here? Now, what's next?
Dude, that's the Walmart in Austin.
Yeah, I know. Again, I mean, if you see, you know, South Africa houses, every house in South Africa has an 8-foot fence with barbed wire and electrical charges and machine guns in their bedside table. Which, hey, if you want to do that in America, that's cool. If you have to do it because otherwise you're going to be raped to death by marauders, not as cool. Not as cool, actually. So that's the trajectory that we're on. We got to get off that trajectory. So again, they're like, why would Iran? Well, South Africa is the number one murder capital, rape capital of the world. They don't want to be a part of that. They want to be away from all of that. They don't want to be browbeaten for their race. They don't want to have a bunch of people who didn't build the community come into the community, call you racist for not giving them the community, and then take it from you by force, because that's what keeps happening in South Africa. Now they're being targeted. So we'll go to one more video of just the awareness of this and what it's like. By the way, Orania, so South Africa, one of the highest murder rates in the entire world, just murder capital. It's completely insane. And it's supported. It's actually given total support from the government. And I'm not in a subtle way, not like they do in America where it's like, well, technically the laws are the same. It's just, it's up to the whim of the Soros-appointed DA, and they just happen to always let the criminals go and then pretend that what they're doing is restorative justice or some other made-up term. No, they actually just come out and say, let's go to clip number 6 now. This is Julius Malema of South Africa, making it clear that he does not support murder. Let's watch.
I'm willing to condemn murder, more than willing, but not of white people. I'm not going to play in the hands of white supremacists.
There you go. Of course I'm willing to condemn murder, but not of white people. They're white supremacists. Of course I'm willing to condemn murder, just not of white people. The government of South Africa. Okay? Now, this is one thing Trump has actually spoken out about, which is amazing. And anybody in the world, white South Africans, might be some of the only people actually genuinely, you know, qualify for asylum because they are actively being hunted for destruction by their own government. But so that's the murder situation in South Africa. Orania, which has been in existence for decades, had their first murder last week. They've had one murder in their entire existence, and it was a husband murdering the wife for cheating on him, I believe, something like that. It was some domestic dispute. Wasn't a strong-armed robbery. It wasn't a armed truck being driven off the road by gangs with spike strips like you see in South Africa. It was a tragic but sort of unpreventable domestic murder-suicide, I believe. Very sad, but one murder in decades versus decades worth of murder in a day with South Africa. And they say, why would you want to leave? Why would you dare create this gated community? Let's go now to clip number 10. Here is, I think it's from that same video, but it's a black South African visiting Orania and making some very interesting comments. Let's watch.
This is Aranya.
This has greeted me.
Everyone's waving. Everyone is waving.
Okay, that's confusing.
Are you nervous to go there and be the only black person in Aranya?
Nervous is not the word. I think uncomfortable. But everyone has been telling me, stay safe, stay safe. I'm not scared at all. I've been in crazy places before, so I don't feel unsafe. But I feel it's going to be different and uncomfortable. Big cars, Aranya flag, doors are just open, no gates. There is a statue of Hendrik Verwoerd, the architect of apartheid. Okay, there's kids. Kids are just walking around. They're kids just walking around. So it's definitely as safe as people think it is. Bicycles is hanging up, not locked. It feels different. It really does feel different. You can feel that this is not, it's South Africa, but not South Africa.
I mean, he's right.
It's not South Africa.
Yeah, it's not South Africa. No, it's nice. No, it looks nice. He's like flabbergasted. He's like, there are children playing outside? What? White children outdoors? This is crazy. Why aren't they being murdered and raped to death as we speak? What is this place? Bicycles not being locked up? Can I steal them? I mean, yeah, everybody's just like so nice to him. Everybody's just like the nicest person.
Reminds me of an Owen Benjamin song
that he stole from 4chan. So yeah, they're trying to destroy it now. I think we have time to go to, I just put a new video in there that we don't quite have time to go to, but we can go to clip number 9. Because this is the ruling party in South Africa, I think, right? The EFF. That's Julius Malema's party. They held a rally in March in march and a rally in Kimberley. Let's go to clip number 9 now.
The fight against Orania is not a distraction. It is a frontline struggle for the soul of South Africa, the existence of all white towns in the 21st century, in a province where the majority live in poverty, is an insult. Is an insult to the working class and to the values of the liberation struggle. While black communities in the Northern Cape suffers from underdeveloped, lack of basic services, land theft and high unemployment, Orania thrives off the profits of racial capitalism and ideological isolation. This is unacceptable. Our ultimatum. The EFF demands a formal response from the Premier's office within 30 days. If these demands are ignored, the EFF will escalate the matter. We will return to Orania in a greater numbers. We will make the memorandum to the national government. We will initiate a court process and we will expose the complicity of any public official who protects Orania's unconstitutional practices. We will mobilize communities, youth, workers and landless people across the Northern Cape. Reakunko Orania, Reabata Lehatsila Rona, Lehatsila our ancestors. It is our land and we demand what is rightfully ours. This province cannot remain a safe haven for apartheid style enclaves. We say with revolutionary conviction, Orania must be dissolved. The land on which it stands must be returned to the people of Northern Cape. The economy it reserves must be opened. The idea it represents must be defeated. In conclusion, fighters.
They didn't build it. It was never their land, but they want it. They want it, and you're bad for having it when other people don't. Eventually, you have to stop running, folks. You cannot run. You cannot run.
We wrote the book together on the modern information war and how to take down the tyrannical globalist. We're seeing the biggest victories in our history. And just like I was funding our operation 25, 26, 27 years ago, selling Patriot t-shirts to get the word out so we could identify each other and realize our strengths, we have come from when I would see maybe one Patriot t-shirt at an airport once a year, though I flew dozens of times a year, to every time I go to the airport, they are the most popular genre you see, not sports anymore. because liberty and freedom is so incredibly popular. It is an adventure to wear the 1776 Americana shirts, the Trump shirts, the InfoWars shirts, the comedy shirts, the largest selection anywhere at thealexjonesstore.com. I mean, it is insane. New ones every day, all made in Arkansas and shipped out to you around the country from our sponsor, Bigley, that owns thealexjonesstore.com. It's an adventure to wear them. Join or die. Modern gas and flag design in olive green or in black. It just goes on and on. This is the uniform of the patriots. The left wants to burn up Tesla trucks and sue us into oblivion and try to kill Trump because they want to intimidate everybody. We outnumber them massively. Wear the shirts. Start the adventure. Fund the operation. This is the uniform of the Second American Revolution worldwide. Look at this bad boy. 47 and 45 together. A design I came up with. You know what our marketing plan is? Designs I like, that Bigley comes up with, the crew comes up with, that listeners send us, that I come up with. And the funny thing is, anything I like or I design magically is a bestseller because you're just like me. That's what it's all about. We're simpatico. Get this bad boy right now at thealexjonesstore.com. Let's look at this bad boy. The Second Amendment protects the first. I designed this. Class of 1776, another badass shirt. Look at this baby. Yeah, it's an XXL back when I was fat before I lost 63 pounds in the last 8 months. Oh, don't worry, we got it in your size. This was a fan design site. I was like, I don't know. I want to put a thing out about me for president as a joke. People love it. This is a bestseller. Alex Jones for President 2028, thealexjonesstore.com. Now, this is a redesign of a shirt I put out more than 20 years ago, and I'm very proud of this because this design and similar ones that we created is now the most popular Patriot design. I see the Ring of Stars, the Gadsden Snake at the airport, the gym, everywhere. Everybody's putting this out. This is just a fan favorite, grassroots everywhere. And so we've remade it and relaunched it, again available at thealexjonesstore.com. I knew the minute I came up with this idea that it was going to be a bestseller. And this is one of the top three sellers out of hundreds and hundreds of shirts. That big electoral victory map from the 2024 election with Trump, evil lost. It says it all, ladies and gentlemen. Get yours now. You know where, thealexjonesstore.com. Now, this seems like a lot of cool designs to you. Believe me, there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds on the site. It's crazy. Ball caps, you name it. And I said there's like four different genres. Classic, Patriot, Trump, InfoWars, Alex Jones, comedy. There's also what the guys at Bigley come up with. I call the triggering line. There's more than 50 of them. Look at this. U.S. Border Patrol, send them back. There's a lot of really wild stuff. But you wear this in San Francisco, you're probably going to get killed. Wear it somewhere else, you're going to probably get your dinner bought for you. All these and more are available right now. It's how we stay on the air. It's an information war. It's about who wants it most. We've won major battles, but not the war. Thanks for keeping us on air. Find collectible badass knives, the best supplements, and more. The biggest selection of Patriot apparel at TheAlexJonesStore.com, and I thank you for keeping us in the fight because we're fighting for you. I'm fighting for myself. We're in this fight together, and we can't do it without you. So thank you so much for your past support.
To the American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
Welcome back, folks. A lot of news still to cover. I just want to close out the conversation about South Africa with an update as to what has recently occurred there. Go to clip number 12 now. So again, not to go over hundreds of years of history, but suffice it to say, when Europeans arrived on the coast of South Africa, there were no black Africans there. There was a very, very small number of tribesmen who used the land to graze their herds. They were called Koshi, I think. K-H-O-S-I, something like that. They were not the blacks that live there now, who were all from, you know, farther north up Africa. There was no land occupied by civilization. There was not a large number feel there's a very like under 10,000 people in the whole region, and they were just like a couple sheep herders. Not the people that live there now and cry racial discrimination and you know, this is our land. There was nothing there for hundreds of years. The Dutch and then the English and the Portuguese built it up. There was apartheid when all of the Africans started arriving after this was built. Apartheid happens, but then eventually falls. Violence against whites explodes. Violence, you know, the farm murders explode. You can find documentaries about this. It's just unbelievably horrific. I've talked to South, we've had South Africans on the show, and they're sort of like, yeah, it's all right, you know. Of course, you know, there's only electricity half the day. The electricity shuts off at 4 in the afternoon every day or something, and it's like, you know, that doesn't sound fun. But I don't understand it. It seems to me, from an outsider's perspective, like every second would be a living hell. It seems like you're living in a country where just at any moment you could just be attacked and slaughtered, and there's nothing you can do about it. Seems sort of horrifying to me. I mean, the number of videos that we've seen of, that have gone viral of, you know, armored trucks driving down the road when they get bombarded. I mean, there are these like running street battles. It's just insane. It's an insane country. So the people, the, you know, Afrikaners who didn't want any part of that created their own, again, went to a place where there was nobody, started a town, built it up. Now it's functional and flourishing and safe and prosperous. It's not all the Africans who had no hand in it, who did nothing to help, who didn't contribute at all, is demanding that it be handed over to them. Because it's unfair, because you have something and they don't. Sure, you worked for it and built it and took the risk and made the sacrifice to get it, and they didn't. But now that you have it and they don't, they want it. And so they're going to take it for racial justice, obviously. Again, just incorporate this into your worldview. Just understand that at a certain point, it doesn't matter how far you try to separate. It doesn't matter how nice you are. For some reason, they don't look at Aranya and go, hey, will you make a town for us? Like, that would be the logical thing to me. If you're living in a, you know, post-industrial dystopian hellscape, but just next door is a nice, flourishing, happy little town, my instinct would be to say, hey, can you help us? Can you show us how you did this? We would like to do this. Will you teach us your ways? Because then you could not just have one nice flourishing town, you could have lots of them. You could build your own and then be nice and flourishing. Instead of having one nice thing, you've doubled that, now you have two. They don't want that. They want to destroy the nice thing. They want to take over the nice thing, destroy it, and then complain that it's been destroyed. It looks so nice. It really looks nice. For now, until they get their hands on it. Let's go to clip number 12 here, because this is what's happening with Aranya, because, well, you'll see. You'll see how it's justified. This is really next level, like, political manipulation. It's really interesting. Basically, just to set it up, basically, the South African government has co-signed and basically allows white farmers to be murdered, as you just heard. Julius Malema. Of course I'll condemn murder, just not against white people. That would make me a white supremacist if I didn't want to murder white people. And so the white people in South Africa, you know, when they got the attention of Trump, were like, yeah, can you sanction this government? You know, this is what you do, right? You sanction governments that are using governmental power to oppress and destroy its own people. Can you help us out here? And now the South African government is taking that petition and claiming it represents evidence of high treason, and therefore you have to be destroyed. This is the, I don't know what you'd call it exactly, but it's a mindset we are unfortunately increasingly familiar with. Oh, white people are being killed and they are complaining. Well, that means high treason. That's high treason, actually. That's white supremacy. to complain about being targeted for systematic murder by your government. Didn't realize you were a Nazi. Right? So expect more of this too. Let's go down to clip number 12.
This past Friday, a so-called legal expert stated on South African national television that AfriForum, Solidariteit and Orania should be held liable for high treason. Have a look.
Treason is treated as a common law offense, and it normally happens where you try to overthrow the government or you coerce the government by violence into action or into inaction or violating, threatening the existence, independence of a country. And then the last one is obviously when you now sort of have changing the constitutional structure. And now, the acts that AfriForum, Solidariteit, and I think the guys from Orania, because they sort of also were involved in engaging the Trump administration and actually make calls. Now, I would say it's violating, threatening, and endangering the existence, independence, and the security of the Republic of South Africa under high treason. That is one of the four legs that you can stand on, because them saying to Trump and his administration to have sanctions against us and sort of have, it's now going to threaten our economic stability in our country, which could lead to job losses, people becoming unemployed, and that can lead to other circumstantial facts. And I think that is where I have to bring it back under high treason, but it's violating, threatening the stability of the Republic called South Africa.
In all this, it sounded more like he described everything the ANC is guilty of. If this so-called legal expert had any sense of consistency, he would have much rather said something about the Guptas, state capture, and all the other shady government deals for which no one went to prison yet. Finally, the US government is reacting to ANC policies like land expropriation. Who are the real perpetrators here? Now, following all this, the South African Police Investigative Unit confirmed on Monday that four dockets of high treason have been opened against AfriForum and Solidariteit. This confirms that the government won't stop at using state machinery against Afrikaners and reaffirms the importance of this international liaison. Charges like these are empty and it won't stick in a court of law, but it just comes to show that the media is institutionally antagonizing Afrikaners. Don't forget that.
So there you go. The government will target you for destruction and murder, and if you complain about it, that's all the evidence they need to accuse you of high treason and double down on their efforts. So, long story short, that's our future if we don't make some major changes, as we're seeing all the same ideological imperatives being applied here as applied there. So at a certain point, you've got to break the conditioning and stand up. Now I have a lot of other news to get to here. I do want to remind you to go to thealexjonesstore.com. I don't think I've plugged once a day. Thealexjonesstore.com, thealexjonesstore.com, your one-stop shop for patriotic merchandise of all sorts, including the incredible supplements that we have, the Ultra Methylene Blue, the Shilajit Complete Gummies now, which I've been taking. I was taking the capsules. The gummies are very, very good. Actually, the Ultimate CMOS gummies and capsules, both of those extremely powerful. A lot of these on sale. So if you've ever wanted to try them, now is the time to go to thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison. Get yourself some of the Shilajit gummies, up to 50% off right now with greater savings for VIP members. And of course, while you're there, snag yourself a collectible frog plushie, which I absolutely love. I was trying to get pictures today. I was trying to get a very particular type of picture today, where I could take a picture of my daughter hugging the frog without actually showing her face. And I never quite was able to get a good one. But I have a lot. I want to go to dot cam. Here's my, just so you know, I'm not lying about it. My daughter just runs around with this thing, hugging it constantly. It's very adorable. She loves it. Your kids will love it too, or it'll just look great sitting on the dashboard of your truck or wherever you choose to put it. It really is a fun gift. It's a fundraiser. It is a collectible item, in my opinion. So go get it now, thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison, and enjoy the straightest of frogs. Now with that, let's get into some international news here. And there's some Honestly, there's some weird developments with Ukraine and Russia. We always knew that it was for Zelensky's, it was in Zelensky's best interest. Well, it's kind of hard to say, but like if for Zelensky himself, the longer the war goes on, the better it is, right? He's in power. He can continue his leadership. Who knows what happens to him once the war ends? Right now, he's being feted by every Western cuck leader out there. He's on top of the world. But it was never really up to him because we're the ones who allow him to continue his war. It's our weapons. It's our training. It's our intelligence. It's our war. It's even our soldiers in certain cases. So when Trump said, you know, I'll have this thing done in 24 hours, that was not a unreasonable suggestion. Russia wants the war to end. America wants the war to end. These are the two powers in conflict. Shouldn't the war be able to end? For some reason, we can't get it done. For some reason, it actually seems to be going backwards. We actually seemed to be closer to a peace agreement 2 months ago than we are today. How or why? Who's to say? Russia seems like it's getting impatient. They had a major attack on Easter that killed a bunch of people. Last night there was another Russian attack on Kiev, killed eight. The attack, which killed at least eight people, was the deadliest on Ukraine's capital in nearly a year. It came just hours after the Trump administration again threatened to walk away from the peace process. Russia launched a huge attack on Kiev Thursday, killing at least eight people and injuring more than 60 others in the Ukrainian capital just hours after the Trump administration again lashed out at President Volodymyr Zelensky of Ukraine and threatened to abandon peace talks. The assault was the deadliest on Ukraine capital Kiev since last summer. Explosions could be heard throughout the night. Clouds of brown smoke rose above the city as the sun came up. Yeah, it's brutal, and it should stop. And of course, again, they phrase this, this attack came just hours after the Trump administration again lashed out at President Volodymyr Zelensky. You want to tell us why? You want to tell us what the lashing out was about? See, the way they're framing it is like, you know, just the mind, you know, Zelensky, this poor, beleaguered underdog fighting for all he's worth, and Trump's just up there just like insulting him and just like, ah, this scumbag, we'll teach him, bomb him, Russia, and just like beating up on the guy. No, Zelensky is destroying the peace talks on purpose, it seems. He's making demands that have never been made before and were never a part of the discussion. The whole time, the discussion's been about settling the dispute over the eastern provinces, special military operation that Russia was carrying out, the area, the territory that they've captured since 2022. And then Zelensky here, 2 months into negotiations, goes, oh, actually, we want Crimea back. And it's just like this was never a part of the discussion. So they're trying to, and again, the attack is brutal, and obviously it's Russia that launched it. They're trying to blame Trump as if he is just screwing Zelensky over. Zelensky is screwing himself over. If Zelensky wanted these peace talks to succeed, they'd succeed, and we wouldn't have to read about any more people dying in Kiev from Russian attacks. That could be over. But he keeps throwing a wrench in the spokes, so blame him. Trump certainly is. He says this, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky is boasting in front of, on the front page of the Wall Street Journal that, quote, Ukraine will not legally recognize the occupation of Crimea. There's nothing to talk about here. This statement is very harmful to the peace negotiations with Russia in that Crimea was lost years ago under the auspices of President Barack Hussein Obama and is not even a point of discussion. Nobody is asking Zelensky to recognize Crimea as Russian territory, but if he wants Crimea, why didn't they fight for it 11 years ago when it was handed over to Russia without a shot being fired? The area also houses, for many years before the Obama handover, major Russian submarine bases. It's inflammatory statements like Zelensky's that make it so difficult to settle this war. He has nothing to boast about. The situation for Ukraine is dire. He can have peace or he can fight for another 3 years while losing the whole country. I have nothing to do with Russia. I have much to do with wanting to save, on average, 5,000 Russian and Ukrainian soldiers a week who are dying for no reason whatsoever. The statement made by Zelensky today will do nothing but prolong the killing field, and nobody wants that. We are very close to a deal, but the man with no cards to play should now finally get it done. I look forward to being able to help Ukraine and Russia get out of this complete and total mess that never would have started if I was president. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Zelensky's just a genocidal little gremlin. Riding his own country into the ground. And again, it's like it's hard to feel sympathy for. I do feel bad for the Ukrainians. I can only imagine what it's like being in a city under bombardment in the middle of the night. And I blame Zelensky for it. Who else are you going to blame? They didn't want this. It'd be over. They have nothing to, they're not holding out for anything, right? It's not like they're like, oh, this offensive, if we get this done, then we'll be in a lot better negotiating position. No, they have nothing. They have nothing. Anything that they do have is because we're providing it to them. I think we should withdraw that too. Again, I don't understand how we get hamstrung by this stuff. All I can think is if I was president, we wouldn't. I'm kidding. I'm sure Trump is doing his best. I'm sure he's got a lot of balls to juggle. Keep up in the air at the same time. I'm sure it's more difficult than I'm making it out, but it doesn't seem like it. Seems like at a certain point, Trump could just go, yeah, I'm recalling everybody. Everything that we're sending to Ukraine, I'm diverting it elsewhere. Everybody we have on the ground in Ukraine, I'm bringing them home. All the intelligence sharing, I'm cutting it off. You don't want to play ball, Zelensky. Good luck. He'd negotiate then. This story is pretty monumental, although I've seen a bunch of stories like this recently. I don't know if something has happened, if they've developed some new ground-penetrating radar or something, but story from Sustainability Times, biggest ever, Trump declares discovery of world's largest gold mine in multi-billion-dollar shock to the global economy. But this was deposits in China. So I was kind of confused by that headline. I guess Trump was just commenting on this discovery in China. China's discovery of a massive gold deposit could significantly alter the global gold market and economy, estimated at $83 billion. This supergiant find surpasses South Africa's South Deep Mine, impacting geopolitical dynamics. The discovery poses environmental challenges, necessitating sustainable mining practices amid rising global gold demands. New scientific theories and technological innovations in mining are emerging, driven by this unprecedented geological find. It's being touted as one of the largest finds in history. A treasure trove has stirred curiosity not only because of its sheer size, but also due to the potential economic and strategic impacts. Nestled in a region already known for its mineral wealth, this discovery is poised to redefine the global gold market and may influence environmental policies and technological innovations in mining practices. So it contains approximately 1,000 tons of high-quality ore. If these numbers hold, it will surpass renowned sites like South Africa's South Deep Mine, which holds 900 tons. The term supergiant is being used to describe deposits that contain billions of ounces of resources. Estimated to be worth about $83 billion, this find could have a profound impact on the world economy. I mean, think about that, folks. $83 billion. That is like a year's worth of USAID funds to leftist organizations. Think about how much money that is. This super giant gold mine that'll change the face of global economics. The largest discovery of gold in history, worth $83 billion, which is kind of like a rounding error on the United States budget. It's kind of a good example of how to frame some of these things when these numbers come out that are like, yes, USAID spent $83 billion trying to make kids gay in Ghana. It's like, okay. You see why I so often just try to reemphasize how much money this is? That a gold deposit worth $83 billion is literally like earth-shattering, changing entire continents. But somehow we spend $83 billion a year on Israel before we even get into their weapons manufacturing. So that's interesting. But there's been a bunch of discoveries like that. Lithium mines were discovered, or lithium deposits were discovered, like again, I don't know if there is technological advances that's allowing us to discover this stuff, or if our former resources are running dry, so now they're looking for new ones. But it feels like a couple times a week now, big, big deposits of minerals are being discovered around the world, not just in China. Finally, I don't really have time for it, but Kavanaugh lights up lefty lawyer in case on LGBTQ books in schools. I don't even understand how this got to the Supreme Court, but the Supreme Court on Tuesday poised to rule in favor of parents in Maryland who raised religious objections to books that were made available in elementary schools in a school district and included stories about gay and transgender characters. And again, how this even got to the Supreme Court is baffling, but what's even more baffling is the comments the Supreme Court is making about this. I've got two videos of Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson desperately trying and failing to wrap her mind around arguments being made. Let's go to number 11 for it. We don't have time for that. We'll go to number 11 first. Let's go to it.
Focus on my question. This is a preliminary injunction. I appreciate that. When you seek a preliminary injunction, you actually have to have a factual record that is the basis for the court to make a determination in your favor that some conduct that you're complaining about needs to be enjoined. And what's confusing to me and hard, really hard, in this situation is that we have a lot of sincerely held beliefs and concerns and children and principles, and I see all of those things, and so really want to be careful about making the pronouncement that relates to this. I don't understand how we can do it on this record, because we can't know. We don't at this moment, based on the record you've provided, know that these books aren't just sitting on the shelves. And you've said that if that's the case, that's not going to be enough.
I disagree, Your Honor. The record is undisputed. And I, again, will refer you to the district court transcript at 63, where counsel said...
So you're saying the Fourth Circuit is wrong when it says, quote, we don't have any information about how any teacher or school employee...
All right, we can take this down. So long story short, she's like, if the books are just on the shelves, it's fine. There's no evidence it's being taught. And the guy's like, yes, there is. There's evidence it's being taught. We have affidavits. We have discussions. We have admissions. We have and she's just like, well, but I don't know. But the Fourth Court didn't explicitly say that these were being included in curricula. So how do we know? And he's like, no, we know. We know these are being taught. But it gets even more ridiculous. Let's go to clip number 5. Here's Ketanji Brown Jackson. Just, I don't know what she thinks is going on. Let's watch.
I guess I'm struggling to see how it burdens a parent's religious exercise if the school teaches something that the parent disagrees with. You have a choice. You don't have to send your kid to that school. You can put them in another situation.
What? No, you do have to go. No, it's the law. You have to send your kid to school. What are you talking about? She's like, who cares if public schools are teaching something that is against your religion? You can just not go to school anymore. I'm sorry, what? Is the Supreme Court justice making this argument? We're screwed.
Every product we sell at InfoWarsStore.com, when we're talking about the supplements, is the highest grade, highest quality, and extremely affordable price. And when we say that our formula is ultimate fish oil, it is the three best known forms of the best essential fatty acids that are known to come from fish and krill. So listen to what is in this formula. Wild anchovy, purified concentrated fish oil. Pure Antarctic krill oil, that's the best krill, and krill's the highest of all of them. And high quality, also an excellent source, wild caught salmon oil. So this is a synergy. Very strong, and it's used and needed in the lining of your arteries, your veins, everything. This is essential to all the other great compounds God has given us to be extremely healthy, but particularly so. That's why even mainline doctors tell people, hey, get a high-quality, high-end form of fish oil. Because even if you're eating beef and things, you're still not getting really the amazing essential fatty acids that you get from high-end krill oil and fish oil. And you'll notice if you take a few before bedtime, the dreams are amazing as well. Separately, there's a lot of other products available that are fan favorites that have come back into stock but limited supplies at InfoWarsStore.com, like Pain MD, natural, really strong, great pain reliever. Believe me, you'll love it. Get it. Vitamin Mineral Fusion, vitamin C with zinc, super concentrated Linus Pauling formula. Rainforest Ultra, the amazing proprietary nootropic that hits in 15 minutes but goes away in 3-4 hours. That way you can take it at 6, 7, 8 at night to go out or something but still go to bed. That's why I love it. Very, very special. And so many other great products like Survival Shield X2, VasoBeats Complete, and more for a limited time because they could be shutting InfoWars down. But if you order now, you'll still get your orders. I hope we survive. You can read the news. The court battles are ongoing. So these are great products that keep us on the air. They're amazing, and they're back in stock at InfoWarsStore.com.
Thank you for your testimony. Was there a moment where you used to speak one language and then you changed how you spoke and now you're speaking like you speak now? And was it the science? Was it the witness? What part changed? And then is there anything in your testimony that you wanted to say that you weren't able to say as a result of you said there's questions that you could answer?
Thank you, Representative, for the question. Yes, I was once an absolute true believer. I trained judges within the state of Missouri around gender-affirming care. I trained all of the other divisions within the hospital setting around what is referred to as gender-affirming care. I believed wholeheartedly in this protocol. My spouse is trans, who has now walked back her transition. She was trans for 13 years. There were three aspects that made me come to change my mind. Number one, this protocol itself was built on regressive stereotypes and is homophobic. The first 70 children that were put through this protocol, 68 of them were same-sex attracted. The entire DSM protocol is based on stereotypes about what sexed behavior looks like, and most gays and lesbians in childhood do not fit the mold of what regressive stereotypes look like for sexed behavior. Of the 71st children that were put through this protocol, one of them died because the protocol itself destroyed what used to be the way that we would invert an adult's penis to make it a vagina. The puberty blocker itself makes the penis not grow to the point where that child was put through a vaginoplasty that used their colon instead, and they died of a massive infection. The protocol itself is homophobic. Number two, I saw a patient population go from 4 new intakes per month of children who are mostly prepubertal boys to 50 to 60 new patients per month, and 80% of them were teenage girls. Guess what teenage girls have in common? They are absolutely susceptible to social contagion. This occurred right when COVID lockdowns happened, right when we stuck one of these in all of those teenagers' phones, and right when we saw all of these girls watching videos. We actually referred to it in the clinic as TikTok tics. They literally were parroting and coming into our clinic with the exact same storyline that they learned online about what it meant to be trans. And then third and finally was that I actually harmed patients. This protocol itself physically harmed my patients to the point where I was sending children to the emergency room for emergency surgeries after they had their first sexual experience and their vaginas were ripping open. We removed the breast of a young woman who called us back begging to have them put on. She not only had detransitioned and was re-identifying as a woman, she was also pregnant. She also grew up in foster care. And she literally told us that part of this identity for her was a social contagion. So I absolutely had to change my mind because ethically it is the only right thing to do. And I beg my party, please do the scientific right thing. Thank you.
An incredibly powerful piece of, personal evidence of what this ideology can do to people. And the Supreme Court at this moment is deciding whether or not you have a right to protect your child from that. And according to Ketanji Brown Jackson, you don't. You don't like that kids are being inducted into this satanic and suicidal cult? Or you can just take your kids out of school then. Crazy, but true. We'll be right back.
Ultimate Fish Oil is now available at InfoWarsStore.com after being sold out for more than 6 months. And we give it the name Ultimate, like so many of other products, because it is the highest grade, the very best you're going to find anywhere. Now, most people know how great fish oil is, but not all fish oil is made equal. A lot of it has been homogenized or basically boiled and cooked off, and it loses almost all of its good effect. This is the highest grade fish oil from three different amazing sources. Listen to this. Arctic krill oil is known as the best essential fatty acid. Then another well-known top one, wild anchovy oil and high-quality wild-caught salmon, also one of the top forms of it. It is back in stock. It is not just good for your cardiovascular system. It's good for everything. Take a few hours before you sleep, and a lot of folks have amazing dreams on it. You ever always eat like a good piece of fish that's fresh? You also have great dreams. You want to experience this. It's so good for your brain, your heart, everything. Ultimate Fish Oil, back in stock. InfoWarsStore.com.
You're watching The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch live right now at band.video.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live from InfoWars here in Austin, Texas. My guest today is Jason Goodman. He's a citizen journalist and founder of Crowdsource the Truth, a resource for people looking for the story behind the story. You can follow him on X at Jason Goodman NYC, and the website is crowdsourcethetruth.org, crowdsourcethetruth.substack.com. Mr. Goodman, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me on, Harrison. I'm delighted to be here.
Well, it's my pleasure. And I think I may be the perfect person for you to explain this to, because I don't understand mortgages. I don't understand these financial maneuvers. I don't even handle my own mortgage. So we're going to, explain it like I'm five, because the story that you have uncovered is very fascinating. And even if it's not really my, cup of tea normally, I understand the implications, and you point out in this tweet, you say, Senator Schiff and Jamie Raskin, would they really risk their public reputations, time in federal prison, and their entire political careers just to save $150 to $200 a month on their mortgages? Of course they wouldn't. These weren't discounts, they were initiation rituals. Welcome to the Lawfare Network. Now they own you. So I agree with that. That's not so much about the mortgages and the way they're sort of jumping from lender to lender and being passed off here and forgiven here. It gets a little complicated and convoluted, but behind it is the influence network and the reason why these things are happening. So I'll serve as the proxy of the audience here and have you break it down for me from the beginning. What is this scandal that the likes of Jamie Raskin and others are involved in?
Yeah. Well, you actually understand it perfectly, because they've wrapped it in this complicated legal process that most people cannot decipher. Right. You go to sign a mortgage agreement, you're going to have a real estate attorney with you who will read all that complicated stuff, explain to you what it means, tell the lender, hey, wait a minute, we've got to make sure this rider accurately reflects my client's primary residence because he's running for Congress. That's why you hire a lawyer, because you don't have to study the law just to sign a mortgage and all that.
Right.
But these attorneys are taking advantage of that. I've dubbed this particular scandal the Lawfare loan scam, because it's just a component of this broader Lawfare network that, frankly, has taken over the U.S. government. Now, in your last segment, you played a very compelling and disturbing clip of a woman who has been through this process and now has come to realize that science dictates we can't be mutilating people like this, but yet judges, Ketanji, our Supreme Court judge there who doesn't know what a woman is, she is going to actually get in between the relationship between you and your child. And so this Lawfare Network, it's incredibly powerful. And when I say it's initiation ritual, what they want is stored on a government website, essentially in a vault, hardcore evidence of these guys signing their signatures, sending these documents through the mail, over the wires. These are felonies. These are things that they could be put in jail for, and they know they've committed these felonies. I allege, of course. I should also say, the things that I'm saying are my opinion. Nothing to do with Harrison or InfoWars. I am not an attorney. This is all just facts and information that I have observed online from government websites. There's a lot of different states where they have completely open access to these records, New York being one of them, Maryland, unfortunately, for Adam Schiff. But the real problem here for Adam Schiff is that he's signed a mortgage, and this is easy for everybody to understand. He signed a mortgage saying that this home in Maryland was his primary residence. And the reason that he did that is you get a much better interest rate on the loan when the bank knows it's your primary residence.
Right.
However, if Maryland is his primary residence, and this was signed, to go back to the document, but this was like 2009, well before, you know, he was in Congress well before he was in the Senate, but he was a congressional representative from California, and you cannot live in Maryland if you are in Congress in California. So he has put himself into what you might say is a legal double bind. Right. If he was being honest on the mortgage application, then he committed fraud when he ran for Congress in California. If he was being honest when he signed the documents that you would sign to run for Congress in California, then he's committed mortgage fraud. And then the other thing that Adam Schiff has done mysteriously, no, excuse me, it was 2003 that Adam Schiff got that mortgage, because after 17 years of signing sworn false statements under penalty, in 2020, October, I believe, 13th, he decided to cure the defect, and he filed a second home rider saying, oh, this is my second home. And so I guess he was cleaning up the record, because then he ran for Senate in 2023. Now, I'm guessing when I say this, Harrison, but I think by October 13th, 2020, Adam Schiff knew that whatever plan for Joe Biden to win that was in place, and he felt confident that he could run for Senate. There he is, riding the mortgage gravy train. Melonhead Adam Schiff is about to run off the tracks. But again, as I said in that other tweet, I just don't believe that sophisticated attorneys, I mean, these guys aren't stupid. They understand the law. I just don't think that these guys with these big public lives, he's getting roasted there. I just don't think they would take this risk. I don't think anyone would. When you think about it, $200 a month to put felonies on record forever, who would do that?
Right. And of course, I mean, there's so many aspects of this to get into, but it reminds me of what's happening with Letitia James right now. Of course, she wanted to go after Trump for, as she claimed, falsifying the value of his properties in order to get better rates on a loan because it was being used as collateral. Well, she got caught doing exactly the same thing, where she was saying that her primary residence was in Virginia, because if it's the primary residence, you get a better mortgage rate. But you can't be the Attorney General of New York while your primary residence is in Virginia. So exactly as you just present with Schiff, either she's lying about her primary residence and committing mortgage fraud, or she's lying about living in New York, and so she's not technically the AG anymore, right?
Well, and there's another thing about that, because Letitia James, it appears, if people look at the research from Sam Antar and Joel Gilbert, she's involved in a litany of financial and real estate crimes. She declared a 5-unit apartment building, I think in Brooklyn, or 5-unit apartment building in New York City, she declared only had 4 units. And that she did so she could get a, you know, from the troubled asset recovery program, she got a special government loan that you could not get if you had more than 4 units, because 5 units starts to become considered a commercial property that you're renting out. 4 units, they say, well, maybe you're living in one and renting out the other 3, so that's okay. So again, she's an attorney. She's an attorney general. She's not just like some DUI ambulance chaser. This is a sophisticated attorney with a lot of experience in prosecuting fraud who, as obviously everybody saw, she's all over Donald Trump for things he didn't even do. Right. And now she's got similar technicalities. See, and I'm glad you brought that up because I want people to pick up on these details. Each of the perpetrators that we're talking about, Letitia James, Adam Schiff, Jamie Raskin, Andrew Weissman, they are all lawyers. And so this is the Lawfare Network. I'm still doing a lot of research, and there are other people who I'm going to be exposing. But what is becoming clear to me is that this is absolutely a network. And we can see how judges, whether they be district court judges, Supreme Court judges, attorneys general, these are all attorneys. And, you know, this is a little bit of a mouthful, but I believe what happened here is a lot of rogue attorneys have installed, they've been working on this for more than 30 years. They have subverted the Constitutional Republic of the United States of America, and they have installed a clandestine, kratocratic kratocracy, a government, a secret government, controlled by thug, rogue judges who use force and even violence. How many people were put in jail on January 6th? One guy lost his eye. Right. I mean, this is insane torture. Yesterday, Andrew Weissman, who was at one time the FBI general counsel, and of course he was the lead prosecutor in the Mueller investigation.
Yep.
He was a U.S. attorney in the Eastern District of New York for many years. He was on a podcast yesterday just going off the rails about this MS-13 gang member not receiving due process. Now, whatever people think about that, Andrew Weissman talking about due process is the most absurd farce you could possibly imagine. He's the guy who signed the order to get the FBI to raid Roger Stone's house
right.
at 6 a.m. He has ruined countless lives throughout his pathetic career. And his number has just been rung. He is in this Lawfare Network as well. He received a $7.5 million real estate transaction consisting of two adjoining apartments in a very premium Tribeca building, $7.5 million. He got a loan for $1 million, which one thing that you know about mortgages, Harrison, the bank's not giving you a mortgage unless you have 20% of the money to put down.
Right.
I mean, on a $7.5 million, that sounds like you might even need more than that. And he got a 4.95% rate at a time when average mortgage rates were 6.5% to 7%. He doesn't even pay 20%. Why is he getting such a favorable rate? Now, that particular instance with Andrew Weissman, the $1 million mortgage that he got came from a bank called First Republic, which became insolvent 5 days later and went into FDIC receivership to the tune of $15.6 billion. But don't worry, Harrison, no taxpayer dollars were used to bail this thing out. You didn't have to pay for it, according to Janet Yellen and Joe Biden. Don't worry that eggs are $14.
Uh-huh.
That has nothing to do with it.
Wow, yeah.
So one more thing about Weissman. This apartment that he bought was from a criminal associate of Jeffrey Epstein. Now, listen, you and I, we are in the news business, and we're both not lawyers, not sophisticated with mortgages. If it came out that I went into a business transaction and years later we learned the guy who sold it to me was a criminal, and I said, hey, I didn't know, that is a possible scenario.
Right.
Andrew Weissman was the lead organized crime prosecutor in New York for years, and he did this deal with the Epstein associate in 2023. So how does he claim to not know? This guy, Toberoff, he was involved in the Tower financial scandal. There's Andrew Weissman. Now, this is his apartment that he lives in the West Village. The $7.5 million worth of real estate is in Tribeca. I was looking into this apartment. So I'm glad you brought up Letitia James, because all the research that Sam Antar and Joel Gilbert were doing brought me back to some documents that I had pulled over a year ago for a completely different reason. I won't go into why that was done, but I discovered this ACRIS database that everybody knows about. I didn't know, but that's where all this mortgage data is coming from. So after I saw Sam and Joel reporting on Tish James, I said, wait a minute, I know some crooked lawyers who live in New York. Let me go back to that database. And that's where I found about Andrew Weissman and a litany of other people who are going to be exposed. And by the way, anybody who's watching this who thinks that like doing something to me will stop the exposure, this material has already been disseminated to a wide range of my associates and also to people who I believe, I can't say that they will, people who I believe can do something about this.
Well, yeah, and I encourage our audience to share it even further, again, by going to follow Crowdsource the Truth on X. And X here, at Jason Goodman.
Well, there's two. There's one for, that's me, and then Crowdsource the Truth is JG_CSTT. I'm sorry to be confusing like that, but I was banned from Twitter so many times.
It happens to all of us.
All these, you know, when Elon Musk brought him back, I have all these accounts now.
Yeah, no, I don't blame you at all, but I was wondering, so the tweets I'm looking at are from that, are from Crowdsource the Truth. So if you want to follow Crowdsource the Truth and share this, from that, account, it's at JG_CSTT. And again, we got to spread this information because, you know, there are people that don't want this information getting out. And once it gets out, there's not a lot they can do to withdraw it. But I mean, you're exactly right about the cabal that's operating in the judiciary. In America these days, and we've covered it, especially in certain districts like the District of Columbia, a third or half the judges aren't even American born. And then when you look into their background, they were never judges before appointed to the one of the highest courts, like the second highest court in the land. They were like exclusively leftist activists. They're lawyers, but they worked for like the ACLU or the SPLC. I mean, they were leftist activists until Obama came along and put a judge robe on them. And now they're stopping Trump's agenda, you know, across the board. So there has been a very long campaign to install these people, knowing that they're friendly. And I think this is fascinating because when people used to ask me, you don't hear a lot about the Illuminati anymore because now the evil is just out in the open. But back in the day, people would ask me, like, what do you mean Illuminati? And I'd always say, like, well, think about this. The rich people know these tricks. They know how to, like, keep money offshore in the Bahamas and not pay taxes on it and avoid the legal consequences of that. And you can't get into, you can't do that without knowing these people. You have to know the right lawyers. You have to know the one, you have to be welcomed into their club, and then they'll give you access to these secrets, where to hide your money, how to play the game, how to cover it up, who you need to know. And until you're in that circle and until they, you know, feel like sharing this stuff with you, you know, you gotta just play with the rules with the rest of us. So I think there's an aspect to that, but then you add this different angle of, and what they're doing is illegal and can be used as blackmail in the future. So I think all of this is it makes total sense to me.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit more about the district court in Washington, D.C. You rightly bring it up. It's one of the most dangerous districts in the country for precisely the reason you just described. One of the judges there, Burl Howell, was also in the Eastern District of New York, U.S. Attorney's Office, with Andrew Weissman. Hmm. They also minted Loretta Lynch, deranged Jack Smith. It's a viper's pit, that Eastern District of New York. And that is the U.S. Attorney's Office that allegedly brought down the mafia. I think it was the Colombo family, but I don't think they brought it down. I think what they did is they used informants that they favored. They, you know, these confidential human informants are granted what's called OIA status. They are specifically allowed to engage in otherwise illegal activity. This is in the Department of Justice handbook, and there are two tiers of that. One is misdemeanors. The other is felonies up to murder. So in the case of Whitey Bulger and people like this, the FBI, including Andrew Weissman and, you know, some of these people that we're talking about, this is how they think. This is how they operate. Who decides, okay, this guy can commit murder and that guy over there is going to get murdered? Like, how do they decide that? Now Andrew Weissman is talking to Vicky Ward about how upset he is that an MS-13 gang member isn't receiving due process. There's another rogue in the D.C. district, Jeb Boasberg, James E. Boasberg. People have heard a lot about him lately, and this ties to our buddy Adam Schiff, and in my opinion, is more evidence of this lawfare network that I'm talking about. By the way, you mentioned Barack Obama installed these judges. You're right. Guess what he is? Also a lawyer.
Right.
Isn't that interesting? Trump is not a lawyer. So
yeah.
Boasberg, you know, we've got this Signalgate case, right? That is also lawfare. So the lawfare loan scam and the lawyers that we're talking about who are associated That's just one part of this. I have been a victim of lawfare for the past 7.5 years. That's how I learned about all this. I never went to law school. I didn't say, I'm going to sit down and study lawfare. They destroyed my business, tried to destroy my life, and it was do or die. I had to dig myself out of this hole. So I've kind of become this, like, I am not a lawyer, but I'm kind of like a jailhouse, you know?
Yep.
I'm a pro se, and I've been doing a lot of stuff. So when I saw that Signalgate case, the plaintiff in it is a nonprofit called American Oversight.
Right.
And a lot of people who watch Crowdsource the Truth know that my longest standing co-host and one of my closest associates is Charles Ortel, who is a very serious financial expert and a complex fraud investigator who I never knew anything about nonprofits or any of this stuff. But Charles taught me about all of that. And this American Oversight that is suing Pete Hegseth and the other members of Trump's cabinet for sending a text message in an application that the Department of Defense and the CIA told them use this when doing these types of communications. American Oversight is suing for that.
Mm.
And when I read the lawsuit, I said to myself, wait a minute, this thing is a public charity. It's a 501c3 nonprofit organized under Section 170B1A6. That means there are strict laws around what it can do with the money that people donate to it. If you donate to a public charity like that, you can write off on your taxes the full amount. So if you're a millionaire, if you're Reid Hoffman or George Soros, you give $1 million to this thing, you get $1 million tax write-off, and now these lawyers don't have to pay taxes on either. They can pay somebody $1 million salary. So you're basically getting 40% more lawyer for your $1 million. The other problem, So this American Oversight, since its inception 8 years ago, has only ever sued Donald Trump and people in the Donald Trump cabinet, you know, people working for the Trump administration. One of the restrictions on a 501c3 is that it cannot engage in politically partisan activity. You have to become a 501c4 or some other type of corporate legal structure to do that. And it is strictly illegal. They are not allowed to engage in politically partisan activity. So I made an argument in an application to file as an amicus in the case, meaning I'm an outside party. I'm not related to this case, but I have certain specific information that will help the court in deciding this properly. May I please enter the case? So I file a motion asking to enter and then a proposed motion saying, hey, here's my amicus brief. If you allow me in, here's what it's going to say. And in that brief, I said, these guys don't have standing to sue because they're breaking the laws by which their corporation was set up.
Right.
And then that goes to the federal rules of procedure, where if your corporation is not legally organized, it cannot be a corporate plaintiff. So I'm saying they should be disqualified from suing, A, and B, the law, the statute that they've selected to sue Pete Hegseth with is the Federal Records Act. Now, this is not a criminal statute. It is not a civil tort. You know, Harrison, if somebody, you guys had the horrible tragedy of one of your coworkers being killed recently, and you can't, as a private citizen, invoke criminal action. I mean, you can make a police report, but you can't sue somebody for murder because it's a criminal statute. If you get into a contract with somebody and they take your money and leave, the cops might not necessarily do anything because they say, well, he didn't steal it from you. You were in this business. You got to sue this guy. That's a civil tort. This Federal Records Act is neither criminal nor civil. It's an administrative statute that only the National Archives can take court action to enforce. So I put all of these things into an amicus brief saying, hey, you got to end this case right now because of these reasons. And it didn't get entered onto the docket. So after a couple of days, I called the court and I said, what's going on? And the clerks, they shouldn't have told me this. They said, oh, the judge told us not to enter it on the docket. And I said, that's fine and everything, but the judge is not the emperor.
Right.
And the judge is not the king. And the law and the Constitution say that the First Amendment grants me the right to petition the government, which the court is part of. That gives me the right to ask if I can enter the case.
Yeah.
They could say no, but it's got to be on the dock.
Right.
So
well,
then,
but of course they're not going to let you enter it because it sounds like you have a slam dunk case. More on the other side. Stay with us. We'll be back in just a few minutes after a quick commercial break. Jason Goodman is my guest. This is This is really bombshell stuff. And, I mean, they're using lawfare to destroy us. We got to fight on that ground and beat them there because they can't actually win if they're forced to follow the rules. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us.
I don't hype things. If I tell you something is amazing, it's because it is. I've taken methylene blue off and on for 6 years since my medical doctor told me to get USP. That means pharmaceutical grade. You can get it, you know, online. And then I noticed that I got some effect. It's good for your mitochondria, energy, with no letdown, because it's not a stimulant. It just gets the electrical operations in your cells working better, similar to iodine, but in a different way and stronger. And then when I got this medical grade, I noticed it was way thicker and way stronger. And so we got a bunch of other brands ordered last week, and what I thought was true, and listeners already figured this out themselves, I noticed a bunch of testimonials on X, where they got these other brands, and they're not deep, dark, navy blue and thick. It's just a bright blue. Some of them is like a baby blue on paper. And that's exactly what I thought. They're saying it's USP. A lot of it isn't USP. And it's watered down. So I'm not just saying this because, oh, we've got the best, so you should get it from us. I told the guys, go out and find the best. And they went and did their research, and I kind of got pissed because it took them, I was telling them 6 months to go get methylene blue. But turned out they got the place that makes a bunch of the pharmaceutical grade because they also use it in surgeries. So that's why theirs has got to be absolutely the best. It gets tested a bunch. It's very strong. Most people get blown away. Everybody feels the energy. The workouts are so good. It's amazing. And a lot of bodybuilders I've now learned mix it with vitamin C powder and things. So get your Ultra, that's the brand name, private label, one of the top firms in the country, Ultra Methylene Blue at thealexjonesstore.com. And I asked listeners that aren't in a methylene blue, try it out, test it against yours. And they're like, yeah, mine says USP too. It's not as dark, not as thick. When it comes out, you know, raw in the bottle. And wow, this is way strong. So we really hit a big one on this. Just like our Irish sea moss is rated the strongest, our Shilajit is rated the best, the turmeric's the highest quality, the strongest. I mean, that's what we go for. And then when we find a better supplier, we move, and then we call it Plus, because under the regulations and things, you reformulate, you have to change the name. You just say Plus, Plus, Plus. So most of our products have a Plus on it, because over the years, we just upgrade. Because see, I want to bring you the best, because I take this, and I treat you like I want to be treated. I was born like this. I'm an old line Texan. It's all about hospitality. We're real nice till you mess with us, and then we're real mean. And I love you guys. You've kept me in the fight. This is our fight together. Thank you for all you've done. If you're a listener that's never gone to thealexjonesstore.com and checked out the widest selection of Patriot apparel, got the incredible game-changing supplements, and more, what are you waiting for? Become a VIP for $30 a month. Canceling time. Get $40 to spend the store each month. Special deals, special offers. Everybody that's going to support us and get great products should be a VIP at thealexjonesstore.com. Also, it sells out sometimes. Any product you want to have, subscribe to it. Get bigger discounts. It never sells out.
Yo, I just got the Ultra Methylene Blue from thealexjonesstore.com. Got two bottles here. I'm going to try it out. Shake it up a little bit. Just got back from work, and I'm feeling tired, but I'm going to try it out. See what happens.
Old-fashioned artillery. Genius.
I'm going to do 15 drops. It says 20 drops, but I'm going to do 15. So I took my methylene blue, and I feel good. My skin feels warm. It feels like my blood's flowing better, or something's happening anyway. Something's definitely happening to me, and it feels good.
God almighty.
You're listening to The American Journal with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at band.video.
Welcome back, folks. This is The American Journal. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, having an incredible conversation right now with Jason Goodman from Crowdsource the Truth. You can find Jason on his personal X at Jason Goodman NYC. Crowdsource the Truth can be found on X at JG_CSTT. And say that again, at JG_CSTT. And it's JG for Jason Jason Goodman, and CSTT for Crowdsource the Truth. I try to emphasize this because I always get comments, people going, what was that again? So I'll say it again, at JG_CSTT, crowdsourcetruth.org, crowdsourcetruth.substack.com. And I can't wait to pick up the conversation where we left it off, because, you know, I brought you on to talk about this mortgage stuff. I'm so glad that we've gotten into these other topics, because this is something that I've been saying, and I wasn't really sure how important it was, that we hear about the judges making these decisions. We hear about Boasberg or these others making these decisions about illegal immigrants or whatever else. And I always point out they can't do that unilaterally. There has to be a case brought. So the cases are being brought by these leftist organizations that often have pre-existing relationships with the judges they're putting this in front of. So to me, and I don't have any proof of this, but my assumption is, okay, they get information about something Trump is going to do. They go to their judge buddy and they coordinate and go, okay, what do we need to put forward to stop this? You know, what do you need to justify a decision of an injunction or some sort of, measure to limit things? And then that's what they do. And it all seems very orchestrated and coordinated to me, because you have a lot of these judges coming out of these very same organizations that are now suing the Trump administration. And I love what you said about American oversight, because that's how they get away with this lawfare. They have 501c3s, but then they don't follow the rules to comply with that. They, you know, the judges are just dismissing objections, even though they're valid. I mean, they're doing it out in the open and they're giving it the color or the shade or the appearance of legal proceedings, but it's really all in flagrant violation of the law. So, I mean, that's just fascinating. So they just completely ignored your amicus brief, even though they were obligated by law to accept it.
Well, at first they did. You're going to love where this goes, because you are super dialed in. Everything you're saying is absolutely correct. And I'm going to fill in some blanks that you're going to. So
good.
The clerk tells me the judge told them not to enter it on the docket. I said, you can't do that. Got in a big kind of argument and the clerk hung up the phone. I then filed a motion. Oh, sorry. No. Then later that day, this was also stupid. I don't know why he did this, but he put Boasberg put on the docket, not a filing, but what's called a minute order, which you have to go into the text of the docket to read. It's kind of hidden on the docket. And it said, motion for leave. So that's my asking to let me in the case. Denied, Jason Goodman.
Huh.
And I was like, oh my God, I can't believe the guy put my name on the docket. And I don't know legally if this is right, but in my head, I was like, well, now I have standing to enter another motion because there's my name on the docket.
Right.
So I put in a motion under Rule 59E, which is a motion for reconsideration when you can point out an error in fact or law. And I said, hey, Jeb, obviously I wrote it, you know, legally sounding, but I basically said, look, you are denying my constitutional rights. I don't deny your right and your judicial discretion to deny the amicus brief, but you can't take my motion before it gets entered in public and stick it in your desk drawer forever. You have to put it on the docket and say something like, this is a super serious case and we just will not accept amicus briefs from pro se litigants. Mr. Goodman should hire an attorney and then reapply. If he had said that, and if he had just put the motion seeking leave without the proposed amicus brief, I would have had probably no ability whatsoever to do what I did. But instead, and this was shocking, he granted the 59E, the motion for correction, you know, the motion for reconsideration. He said, you're right, I violated your constitutional rights. Enter Goodman's motion. So he says that on April 9th. Now, we need some lawyers out there to answer this question for me, but we might not be able to get to the answer because sometimes lawyers have an understanding about procedure in a particular court, and it varies from the rules, the law, what should happen. But the point is, it says on the docket, filed, that's when you send it to them, entered, that's when they put it on the docket, and terminated is when the judge has ruled on it, and this is no longer part of the case. So the 59E motion, the reconsideration motion saying, hey, you violated my rights, that was filed, entered, and terminated on the 9th. Meaning the clerks now were ordered by the district court judge to enter my motion. And they waited 5 days. And they didn't realize what was happening at the time, but this was an incredibly strategic delay. Because on April 10th, when my motion should have been on the docket in public, there was a status conference. And in the public galley, in the court, you had New York Times, Washington Post, everybody would have seen this motion and people would have said, wait a minute. Ooh, Jason's right. This plaintiff doesn't have standing. This whole case is defective. But they didn't enter it until April 14th. And that took another argument with the clerks where I called and I can tell they were doing shenanigans. I mean, you know, Harrison, when you confront someone, if the guy said, huh, what? Oh, I don't know. And he came back and said, oh, sir, we found it. And because of this non-standard process, didn't go, I'm sorry. He didn't do that. He like went away from the phone and came back all nervous, like, oh, it's the guy. He's calling, you know, and he's like, oh, they're going to put it on later. I said, what do you mean later? You got to put it on right now. You've been ordered by a federal judge. You're violating my constitutional rights. Now you're violating a court order. Put it on the docket now. And the guy was like, oh, how about hung up the phone.
Wow.
And then later that day, it went on the docket. And now it's been on the docket for over a week. Where are Pete Hegseth's defense attorneys? Right. Why didn't they seize upon this and say, all right, don't let Goodman in. Who cares? We're going to write a motion to dismiss on exactly this legal theory. They didn't do that. You know who acted, Harrison? Adam Schiff. Two days ago, he said, I am calling on the National Archives to enter this case. Why did he say that, Harrison? He's curing the defects that I have pointed out. The National Archives are the only ones who can bring a case under the Federal Records Act. And the idiot lawyers working in American oversight paid hundreds of thousands of dollars by the likes of Norm Eisen and other lawfare scumbags. How did they not know that? Or maybe they don't care because they know it doesn't matter what the law is, doesn't matter what the rules are. We're in the lawfare network. Whatever the hell Jeb wants, that's what's going to happen.
Right. They'll do what you let them do. What they can get away with is what they can do, basically. So that's incredible. I wonder if the IRS could be, play a part here. I mean, if it's the 501c3 thing they're violating, wouldn't that be the IRS oversight of that and could maybe withdraw that label?
Absolutely. They could lose their tax exempt status. They could do an investigation and say, wait a minute, you guys have been politically partisan since the day you started this 8 years ago. How many millions of dollars have you taken in tax free? Now you're going to get charged excise tax penalties. See, DOGE is wonderful, but we don't need that. What we need to do is we need to audit every single 501c3 in the United States of America. And I would do it in descending order from the largest net asset all the way down to, I would offer amnesty to things that take in less than $1 million a year, just to not have to focus on a ton of charities. But the Gates Foundation, the Clinton Foundation, the Open Societies Foundation, the Brookings Institution, the Lawfare Institute, you could recover billions and arrest loads of criminals, roll up this lawfare network. It's got to be done, Harrison.
It absolutely does. And the clock is ticking. That's amazing to see the way that they have to kind of scramble to deal with the objections you make. And thank God you are making, I mean, this is what we need. And this is sort of the frustration when people go, well, why didn't the judges stop the invasion when it was happening? Why are they just stopping us from sending people out now? It's like, well, the left has this highly sophisticated lawfare network that its whole point is to intervene when things are happening to stop it. We need that on our side. And it seems like you are doing this as a one man band, as it were. But sometimes that's all it takes. And if you can, file it correctly and force them to play by their own rules, you can really make a difference in this. So I think that's incredible. And I think you've revealed a couple of vulnerabilities they have in these trials or these cases that they're putting forward. I mean, whether it's the 501c3 labeling or the who has jurisdiction. I mean, there's so many issues with these, and yet they just roll forward if nobody points them out. If they can get away with it, they do it. So what else can we do? What else can you do to stop this judicial interference, the judicial coup that we're witnessing right now?
I can't right now describe the next steps I'm going to take, because obviously then the people who are going to get rolled up would do like Adam Schiff is doing to things to counteract. See, I mean, if I had known even one day earlier, I could have raised hell. I could have gone to the hearing.
Right.
I could have said, hey, where's the most, a lot of things I could have done. But I'm not a lawyer. These people are experienced. And I mean, Boasberg, he's a judge. He knows everything about the law, how to break it. That's how this Lawfare Network works. We go back to the beginning of our conversation. You and I look at a mortgage document, our head spins. And by the way, I did use artificial intelligence to understand some of this dense data and to parse it out into stuff that I can understand. And so I know that people are very concerned about artificial intelligence taking over and killing everybody. I narrowly avoided that with two wives, so I'll take the computer and, you know, it's helping me. So I'm cautiously optimistic.
And your wives can't summarize a 100-page briefing into a paragraph in 4 seconds.
So
there's that. No, hey, AI, that's where AI comes in handy. I mean, really, it is a powerful tool for stuff like this. So that's great.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, you think about it, I've just started this last week, and so far, I'm at a 100% hit rate. I got to figure out if there's a property database in Atlanta, Georgia, because Jasmine Crockett is also an attorney.
Right. She's from Houston, though, isn't she? I think she's from Texas. I only know that because I'm embarrassed by her, so I feel bad that we sent her to Congress.
I haven't started looking into her yet, but that's good to know. Yeah, I'm sure she is. If you see a lawyer doing screwy stuff like this, it's highly suspicious to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And if nothing else, you can at least go after them for that, for, you know, using, I mean, lawyers are held to a very, very high standard of behavior. I mean, you get caught lying or misrepresenting things. I mean, that's it. And we've seen it in our cases. I mean, our lawyer, Norm Pattis, had his license revoked and had to fight for a year to get it back. He did eventually because he was right. But I mean, you know, these lawyers, just because they're lawyers doesn't mean they should be able to get away with this. It means they should be held to a higher standard of obeying the law. And, but clearly if they're all in it together and they're all patting each other on the back and, they all have this blackmail on each other of a certain sort. And maybe we can get back to that because that again is where we started our conversation with these mortgage, I don't know if we want to call it fraud, but certainly seemingly fraudulent, you know, applications for mortgage or the way these things are shuffled around. And again, how does that play into this, do you think? Do you think it's blackmail or do you think it's just shared interests? What do you think is behind all of this?
I think it serves multiple purposes. And I almost forgot to mention one of the most important lawyers in the midst of all of this. And this also ties back to Letitia James. The Stormy Daniels case, who was at the center of that? Trump's former attorney, Michael Cohen.
Right.
And people remember that Michael Cohen said under oath at that trial that he got a home equity line of credit and that he had paid Stormy Daniels $130,000 from that home equity line of credit without telling Trump. And the idiotic explanation that he gave in court was that he wanted to make the problem go away without telling Trump because he wanted to be attorney general or White House counsel or something like that. And he didn't tell his wife. So I heard that testimony under oath and not telling his wife seemed plausible. So I said, well, that's interesting because I knew he owned maybe it's like a $3 or $4 million condo in a Trump building on Park Avenue or something. And I knew that that was the marital property that they were talking about. So I figured maybe Cohen owned an apartment from before they were married or a ski house or a hunting cabin or something. And he could only get $130,000 loan against that. Mm. And his big money is invested in his marital home. But then when I was investigating the mortgage, I found out, no, that's completely wrong. Not only did Michael Cohen get a home equity line of credit on the marital property without telling his wife and without receiving her signature, how did the bank give him that? That's mortgage fraud against the wife.
Yeah.
And you could just take out a mortgage on your house, leave with all the money and saddle the wife with the debt.
Right.
I mean, they can't let people do that, but they did. And Harrison, the bank that did this was First Republic, the same bank that went insolvent 5 days after loaning the money to Andrew Weissman. So my question is that bank like an intelligence cutout, like a professional pass-through kind of thing?
Right.
Or just send money to Cohen and he does whatever he wants with it? Because yes, it is a blackmail network, but also money is a tool. If you need to pay a hooker, oh, and that's the other thing. He goes to the bank. He's like, I need a home equity line of credit, but I don't want to tell my wife, even though she's co-owner of the collateral. And they say, well, that's okay, Mr. Cohen. You're probably going to start a new law firm or right. surprise your wife with an extension on the house. Oh, no, I'm giving money to a hooker. Okay, here's your loan. Have a nice day. It's crazy. It's just not a real loan. There's something going on there.
Yeah, it certainly stinks. I mean, it certainly doesn't pass the smell test. And it's amazing when you start pulling these threads, the whole thing unravels. So again, I mean, do you think the Trump administration is taking this serious? Like, what would your advice be to the Trump administration? If you had a meeting in the White House today, I mean, what would you be presenting to them? Because as far as I can tell, they're sort of having a hard time dealing with this judicial interference. It doesn't seem like they're able to get around these injunctions and things. So like, what are they missing? How are they not confronting this in a way that's effective? And how would you give them advice to do that?
I think they need to evaluate my information and the evidence that I have used to conclude that the constitutional republic has been subverted by this clandestine, kratocratic autocracy. And if that can be proven through facts and evidence at trial, every single person involved should be charged in a RICO, racketeering influence corrupt organization, with sedition, treason, mortgage fraud, all the things that they've done. They should have a giant, it would be the biggest RICO case in the history of the United States. First time any of these, you know, Congress people, judges, implicated in a RICO, and we roll up this network. You're not going to sit around, you know, take 2 years, onesie, twosie, impeaching these judges. That's never going to get confirmed in the Senate. They need to be indicted on criminal charges. The reason why you need to impeach a judge is because they have really tremendous judicial immunity that they have granted to themselves. And this is an illusion that judges have cast over everyone as well. Impeachment is described in Article 2. And it's for presidents and judges and other, government, you know, people who hold government roles. But that is described as, you know, bribery, high crimes and misdemeanors. That's in Article 2. In Article 3, they say that judges serve while on good behavior. And if the producers look in the articles section of the Crowdsource the Truth Twitter, the first article is a draft bill that I wrote called the Judicial Accountability Act of 2025. And my number one piece of advice to the Trump administration would be to pass the Judicial Accountability Act of 2025, because it is intended to clarify and define the good behavior clause of Article 3. Obviously, if Article 2 establishes the executive branch and talks about impeachment, and then Article 3 introduces this other thing, good behavior, that's obviously different than bribery and high crimes and misdemeanors. Nice. I also have put into here a proposal for a public, you know, remedy to bad behavior. So let's say you're a litigant in a case like me, and Boasberg or Valerie Caproni violate your constitutional rights, you would be able to file a specific type of motion that would be defined by this statute. You know, once this bill or this proposed bill would become a law, you'd be able to file a motion, and this motion would go to a special clerk in Congress, not at the court, not some clerk that's having lunch with Boasberg or getting a whisper while he's standing in line at the urinal. Hey, don't file that Goodman motion.
Right.
Walk out of the room. They don't know that you got to put it on after the 10th. They just told them don't file it. But if your rights are abused in court, you could file this type of motion with Congress, where a special, you know, bank of clerks would be hired and trained, and they would review all of these motions. And if it's ridiculous nonsense from somebody who's just upset about the ruling, it gets denied. But if you raise valid points like I have with Boasberg and other judges, it would immediately go to a trial of the judge. And it wouldn't be in the Senate. It wouldn't be in the House. It would be in that judge's own courtroom, where they would come down off the bench. They would sit in the defendant box in their own. They get a timeout in their own courtroom to be humiliated in front of the public, where through the normal jury selection process, voir dire and all that, I forgot one part. The judge would be able to select a sitting member of Congress to serve as their counsel in this matter. Mm. And then the opposing party in Congress would choose the opposing counsel. So these two Congress people would act as the lawyers. They would conduct the voir dire and select the jury. Then you'd have a jury of 12 citizens from this judge's district who would listen to this evidence. And if the jury convicts, the judge is immediately fired for bad behavior. That could take a few months, and you don't need the Senate involved. And all these relationships that have been created with the Lawfare Network and people who own banks and, you know, get your wife into the Federal Reserve so that she can get fintech companies. This is Jamie Raskin's wife. Get fintech companies that she's on the board of to have master accounts and stuff. This Judicial Accountability Act of 2025 would nullify the Lawfare Network, and it would put the power back in the hands of the people.
I think that's brilliant. And if nothing else, just put the bill forward, get Congress, you know, starting that discussion, put the Democrats on the back foot, at least make them scramble to try to, you know, deal with it, with that looming threat, because they would get wrapped up. And I mean, how many times, I don't know if there's a single judge we've talked about who didn't have a daughter or a son who was somehow receiving millions of dollars from USAID.
Exactly.
I mean, that alone is such egregious, you know, violation of, you know, objectivism as a judge. How can this go on? So there's got to be a way. And obviously impeachment, as you point out, is sort of a non-starter. I wonder, is that just because we're still running with the impeachment rules from back when America was like a million people and now we're 350 million? Like, we need a different, because it sounds like what you're proposing is almost a different kind of expedited and less Congress-centric form of impeachment. I mean, is that a good way of describing it?
Well, I wouldn't quite say that. It's rooted in the Constitution. I mean, I'm not inventing something new. It says it right there in Article 3 of the Constitution. Judges serve while on good behavior. So it's a little vague, because what happens when they have bad behavior? That hasn't been defined.
Right.
There's a lot of precedents in history where Congress has said, oh, you're right, this aspect of the Constitution is vague. So then they get a bunch of, you know, impressed with themselves people like Dershowitz or whoever studies the Constitution get around and argue about what they wrote in the Federalist Papers and what this guy said to this guy and what they intended. And then they figure, okay, and they come up with a new law that explains what the framers wanted. They definitely did not want judges to steal all of our money, violate our rights, stick people in solitary confinement for walking around on the Capitol grounds. You know, they didn't want that. And this is, it's really the impeachment process has gotten so jammed up because the judicial branch has done that. They've convinced us that this is the only, look at how Masonic that looks. This guy is a bonesman. He was in the Skull and Bones in Yale. I mean, this is a tyrant. He's violated my constitutional rights. I would file a motion under the Judicial Accountability Act, and we'd have a hearing about this clown.
100%. I mean, he's got the look, doesn't he? He's got the supervillain look down pat. I think that's brilliant, because, you know, I do, you know, I'm at heart, I'm still sort of ideologically a libertarian. I don't like the idea that, you know, these judges are sort of ruining their own reputation, and that, like, Trump supporters are calling, including myself, going, just run over judicial review. Forget it. We need to get this done. It's the survival of our country. Like, I want there to be a judiciary to rein in an out of control executive. But right now, it's totally being abused, and it's not fit for purpose. So instead of it going away, we need a way to reform it, to remove bad judges. We can still have that constitutional check and balance without it being abused by the left. And I think the way you present your argument is absolutely brilliant. Thank you so much for coming on. Jason Goodman at Jason Goodman NYC, Crowdsource the Truth at JG_CSTT, CrowdsourceTheTruth.org, CrowdsourceTheTruth.substack.com. I love what you're doing. Thank you so much for coming on, and please keep it up. It's not often we talk to people that are really actively, tangibly making a difference, or at least trying to, and filing things and doing things. It's amazing. I love it. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Harrison. Thank you.
My pleasure. Absolutely. Jason Goodman, everybody. That's going to do it for us. Stay tuned. Alex Jones in 90 seconds. Don't go anywhere.
I've not been very ignorant in my life. I remember being extremely young and not understanding things. I remember being about 4 years old, and I really thought the world was black and white previously, and everything I saw that was color was the future. And suddenly the world became color, because I didn't understand that television, most of it was fiction, and the rest of it was just snapshots of limited reality, however they wanted to present it. And I just started thinking about it last night, that a lot of the public in a trance state that believes two men can have a baby and, you know, things like that, a litmus test in the cult that you're under their mind control, if you accept that, they really see the world in something like a four-year-old would. Now, one of my earliest good memories is arguing with my dad when I was 3 years old on Christmas Eve. We had a brick fireplace, red brick, there in Dallas, and there was white mortar, and he was saying, oh, no, Santa Claus comes out of his chimney, you know, like this, just like those two red bricks between the white. He just slips down. I go, well, there's a fire in the fireplace. He's going to catch on fire. And he's so fat, it wasn't that big of a fireplace, it was a small house. He can't fit in there. My dad's like, well, that's how he does it, starts laughing. And I said, Dad, Santa Claus isn't real. So I got that early on. Nobody told me, but still, it was about another year or so, probably by the time I was almost five. I remember, like, sitting there watching The Wizard of Oz with my parents. It had come back in movie theaters. They took me to it, and like, after the movie, I said, so, it's black and white at the start, but it becomes color when she goes to Oz. And my mom's like, no, that's just what they did as an effect. They shot it on film in black and white, and then they shot the rest of the movie in color to have that effect. And I went, oh, so the world has always been in color. He said, yes. And we're like, wow.
I've got one that can see.